Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the continuation of the May meeting of the Fish and Game Commission. I'm Richard Rogers, president of the commission from Carpinteria. Sitting immediately to my left is Commissioner Dan Richards from Upland. Some of you may not know him. He's relatively new on the commission. Sitting on the other side of this gentleman is Commissioner Jim Kellogg from Concord. And sitting down at the far end is Commissioner Michael Sutton from right here in Monterey. The guy who just got up and turned his back to you rudely is John Carlson, the executive director of the commission. The deputy executive director of the commission is sitting right here, Adriana Shea. The other assistant deputy director of the commission is John Fisher, sitting right over there, and Sherry Tiemann and Sherry Cole of our award-winning staff. Is that good?
Yes,
yeah, okay, good. Deborah Barnes, our Attorney General. Before I go any further, I would like very much to give the new director of the Department of Fish and Game, Don Cook, an opportunity to say hello to all of us. Thank you, Don, for coming to our meeting.
Thank you, President Rogers. It's a pleasure to be here today. It's extremely enjoyable to be back in front of you and Mr. Kellogg, that I've had the pleasure of working with for in my former career, and Commissioner Sutton, Mr. Dutton. I appreciate immensely the opportunity to be here, and I'll have a lot more to say, Richard, during my report, which you delayed for me and explained my absence yesterday and a few other odds and ends.
Well, your absence was a wonder. You accomplished yesterday was terrific.
It was a career-making day. So yeah. I look forward to talking to you later on.
Thank you very much. We look forward to hearing that report. Sitting a couple over from the director is the chief deputy director, John McCammon, and sitting between the two of them is Deputy Director Sankey Mastrup. Also, pardon? Well, you're doing better than I can, you know, if you can keep in control that way. Neil Manji, I think, is out here somewhere. Well, at least he was. Maybe he's on the golf course. Eric Loft, he's going to hate me for putting that on the... Eric Loft just walked in the room. And let's see. Jordan Traverso was in the back. There she is. And today we have Rob Allen, who's Assistant Chief of Enforcement, and Lieutenant Don Kelly, and I will not say what I did yesterday because he told me he was going to get me, and Paul Gaskey, Lieutenant Paul Gaskey. So take it away, John.
Thank you, President Rogers. Before we get started, just a few housekeeping things. The restrooms are down the hallway here, and I want to remind everyone that these proceedings are being videoed and live streamed across the internet. They also get archived, so at a later date, if you want to watch a meeting or go to a specific agenda item, you can. If you have trouble sleeping at night or something, you need some help, you know, check that out. The other thing I'd like to remind everyone is that speaking in the audience or in the aisleways in this room here, if it's disturbing, if I can hear it up here, that's a disturbance. If it's bothering your people around you, that's a disturbance, and we really don't tolerate that. When you come up to the microphone, you'll have an allotted amount of time. Please state your name for the record and go from there. If you want to have other discussions, go out in the hallway so that the meeting can, you know, move forward in an orderly manner. There were a couple of items that we did not finish yesterday, and we are going to pick up with those. Also, as a reminder, I'd like to I announced this yesterday, that item number 23 on our consent calendar is withdrawn from today's agenda. That's possible adoption / ratification of commission findings related to rejection of petition to list the American pika as a threatened species candidate. That will be on a future agenda for action by the commission. Yes. Thanks for the reminder. Also, if you're interested in speaking on a specific agenda item, please fill out a green card there in the back of the room there and turn it into staff with the list of the numbers of items, which ones you want to speak on. We have an aggregate time limit of 10 minutes a day. So please choose your items wisely. Also, if you have written materials you want to turn in when you're speaking, hand them to staff at this table here. Don't bring them to the dais. We appreciate that. I think that's all the housekeeping.
I think John had a comment.
Yeah, I need to see Mark. I think it's McClock.
Yeah.
I need to see Mark in a second.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, and would you also be so kind as to put your cell phones on vibrate, if that's okay, or off, one or the other? Okay. Fire away.
Now, we're going to start back with item number 7. We're working through the department's updates. Don, do you want to – you need a few minutes, or are you
– No, that's fine.
Okay, so we will go – we've covered several of these, but there's a couple we haven't. We'll start up with 7A, Receipt of Department of Fish and Game Director's Report. New Director Don Cook.
Thank you very much, Commissioners. First of all, what I'd really like to do is extend my sincere appreciation to Chief Deputy Director John McCammon. For 7 months, I'm amazed that he's still standing for doing two jobs, and I can't impress upon everybody how thankful we are for that. What a great job John did. And one of the things that I observed was his relationship with you, Commissioners, and the desire to really maintain and improve a strong working relationship with the Commission and really have some good dialogues. And so I certainly plan as a director to keep moving in that direction, but I really wanted to recognize John for his leadership efforts, and I think together we're going to make a very good team to be working with you. I also wanted to, as I mentioned yesterday, I really wanted to be here for the very first Commission meeting I would be the director for, but I had an opportunity to be with the governor and celebrate an agreement with the Tejon Ranch Corporation. And for a little bit of background, the Tejon Ranch is a 270,000-acre ranch right on I-5 that at the base of the Grapevine that's down in Kern County and goes over the top into L.A. County, touches a coastal range, and goes over into the eastern deserts. It's just truly a wonderful mix of California's splendor and biodiversity. The Tejon Ranch Corporation and several conservation groups spent two very long years with the state and federal wildlife agencies and crafted an agreement, and please listen carefully to these numbers. Of their 270,000-acre ranch, 240,000 acres of that ranch will be in permanent conservation. It's an amazing treasure for the future generations of California, especially in that part of the state and especially with the diversity. So it's, one of those you can't find a better example of where the conservation community and the development community were able to come together and do something that's going to have such a fantastic legacy for the state of California and our wildlife resources. It's just a very diverse piece of the world, and just like I mentioned, just sort of a once-in-a-career opportunity to see things happen. And it set the bar very high for us as we're working with other folks, but it was just a wonderful opportunity. Excuse me, I'm still fighting a little bit of a bug. As I mentioned earlier, I expect to have a continued and good working relationship with the Commission. I also plan to bring that style to my leadership role in the department. I believe firmly that the best way to get things done, especially with some of the challenges we have in front of us, is to be at the table with everybody in a constructive manner early on in the process, so folks can try and find pathways to move forward to solutions that are going to work for us. And those are difficult things to do and challenging, but the alternative is really not acceptable to us. And so plan to be heavily engaged in the department. Personnel will follow that lead and remain engaged with our folks. And I don't want to imply we're not doing that now, but it's really a priority for me to be working with people as we move forward. One of the things that's been on our numerous discussion items with you in the past is certainly the salmon situation this year and the the disaster that it's caused to commercial, recreational, and business owners. And this is one of the many things John was doing in addition to being the acting director and the chief deputy director. Is John was back in D.C. Last week, I believe it was, really representing the state of California well. He has worked closely with our governor's office and the governor's offices of Oregon and Washington to put a package together. I think we need to really acknowledge also the leadership of Congressman Thompson, Senator Feinstein in that process. Right now, we're the Speaker Pelosi is looking to move a package forward that would provide a significant amount of relief for California, Oregon, and Washington. The timing of that's in question right now, but hopefully by Memorial Day we'll see some action. Again, where it's still in flux, but I think the governor's support, the governor of California, Oregon, and Washington support to the Secretary of Commerce has been key in this, and I think we're going to at least see some level of relief, which is welcome, much welcome. Other than that, I think I'll conclude now, and again, it's a pleasure to be back in front of you and look forward to a long and productive relationship.
Don, thank you very much. I must tell you, it's wonderful to have you at our meetings. Not only have we heard a great deal about you, but many of us have known you for a long period of time, and we're just absolutely delighted that you're here. You are sort of following Johnny Wooden. Because John McCammon, for 6 months, was just a delight to work with and led the department absolutely beautifully and established a very wonderful relationship. And so it's terrific. You guys have really been on a roll for a long period of time, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. And
Commissioner Kellogg.
Don, it can't be said better than what Don said about the job that John McCammon did, and I would just like to see our commission and this audience thank him with a round of applause.
Hear, hear.
I want to echo those comments. Don, welcome. We're really glad to have you here, and congratulations on Tejon Ranch. I think that's the kind of collaborative negotiation among the conservation community, the state government, and private landowners that we need to see more of. Saving 90% of that area in return for 10% development is extraordinary. But I had a question for you on that score. Given the state of the state's housing market, what's the likelihood that we'll actually see development going forward on that 10%? It seems to me that a lot of developers are just suspending plans to build anything these days.
Sure, and I don't want to speak to the ranch's intents, obviously, but they're going to make, I'm confident, sound business decisions. The thing to remember about this agreement, it's an in perpetuity thing. As the ranch described it to us, they came to us with a 100-year plan, their 100-year vision. And so it's, I think a lot of these projects are still in the conceptual, probably a little bit further than that, but they haven't started the regulatory review process, which they'll still go through. Everybody understands that, and so I think that over time you'll see that, and over time there's tremendous opportunities for the conservation of that parcel at the same time. I did neglect to mention that there will be a conservancy established. This will be a voluntary conservancy that the ranch is putting together. It'll have members from both the Tejon Ranch Corporation as well as the environmental community, and then 4-H for those two groups, and they'll select 4 additional members at large to actually carry out the habitat manipulation and improvement on the project. So I think it's a long-term thing, and you'll see development occur when things are right for the company.
One other question about Tejon, as you recall, they have had a pretty active hunting program on the ranch, about 1,800 permits a year,
right.
And they also displayed real leadership in terms of the recognizing that much of the ranch is significant California condor habitat. They went ahead and eliminated lead ammunition voluntarily before it was required by state law. Do you foresee the hunting program being continued as part of this process?
Yes, I see no reason that that program wouldn't continue. I also think a lot of their normal ranching stewardship operations are going to continue through that. They have been good stewards of the land, like you mentioned, Commissioner. They were the very one of the very first PLMs in the state, and so they have a very good track record with us. And so a lot of the typical agricultural stewardship practices have gone on. Those aren't incompatible with wildlife and conservation, and those will probably continue over the line.
Good. Thank you very much.
Moving on to item number 7F, update on automated license data system. Deputy Director Mastrip.
With that introduction, I'm not sure what I can do with it. Good morning, Commissioners, President Rogers. As you are well aware, we've been diligently working on an automated license data system project, which is still in progress. As you know, it's proceeding a little slower than we anticipated, again, because California's always got to be different, and our system of hundreds of permits and tags and the features that you as a commission would like ALDS to perform has kind of put the company back on its heels a little bit in terms of complexity on the programming, et cetera. The good news is they're getting back on track. I think we will, right now we're on an 2010 delivery rollout date. And based on recent performance measures and evaluations, it looks promising. I know you've heard that for about a decade. But we haven't given up, and it's still proceeding, and I just want to let you know that the current contractor is still sticking with us. They haven't run screaming out of the building yet. So we are as hopeful as we can be. Any specific questions?
No, but Commissioner Richards and I have a graphic demonstration for you. Are you ready? 1, 2, 3, Idaho and Florida. This is for next week for me in Florida, and that's
hunting and fishing for a year.
Online, no problem. They said, "Oh, hi, Mr. Rogers," once I started to give them my information.
Same with me. It's ridiculous.
Zonky, it is so ridiculous. I know it must be crushingly embarrassing to be one of the only states in the union that doesn't have this.
Absolutely, and I enjoy you dragging me through that.
I must tell you, I find it embarrassing and irritating.
Yeah, in all sincerity, I think it's unacceptable. I mean, whatever, and welcome to the foray, Don. This is it's unacceptable. I mean, when you tell me the current contractor is sticking with us, I'm thinking, why are we sticking with him? That would be my question. I mean, it's really absurd. So many states.
These are slam dunk systems.
If you hunt or fish around the country, you can go online, you can buy your license, you can print the thing out. You've got a barcode. It is so amazingly simple, and for whatever reason, we are so amazingly inept. It's disappointing, and really, at the end of the day, it's us that's inept. It's not the contractor. It's us because we're not getting this thing done. So. Don, I hope you can ratchet that up maybe to a little higher priority.
It would be different if California was the center of the information technology world.
True. We have to find how to use computers here. That's true, yeah.
Just as a point of reference, the states that you so easily purchase your license is the same contractor that's struggling with our situation. So
what about Maryland?
That must mean is that we have asked them to do things that all the other guys didn't seem to ask them. Right. So I guess those are really critical things.
Yeah. It threw them for a loop. They've been struggling with the programming and the things.
What would the programming be different if? I mean,
you're asking
the wrong guy.
The wrong guy. Yeah. I can certainly, if you desire, have our project manager come in and give you just grueling details if you'd like, or give you a written report. We do have those materials available that kind of highlights the issue.
You know what I'd rather have? I'd rather have some feet to the fire, like when it will be done. Who's in charge and when would it be done? Because I think that's how it gets done. And this is a constant complaint. I mean, this is an over-the-top complaint with everything that we have to do. And so it's not
I'm personally aware of a lot of people who fish.
Tons.
Fish in the state of California who fish without a license because they fly in one night and they start, you know, they get on a boat the next day and, you know, without a captain. So that
I'm
not
personally
covered.
Not aware of any of that, so I'm going to get away from that.
You're not. However, having said that, I think I would like to, if it's the pleasure of the commission, I think having a formal presentation on this, maybe at our next commission meeting or certainly sometime during the summer, would be a good idea. Yeah, I know we've done it. And that didn't accomplish anything. Well, that's fair. It didn't. And maybe it's our, you know, the conditions, the differentials that we're asking them to produce that are we certain that those are things that we absolutely must have?
Well, for example, we are trying to get our commercial license system for our commercial fishing and other
integrated into the
yes, system. And there's certain log requirements, etc. Most of the states offer your basic hunting and fishing license, your basic 1 or 2 day. Our list of desired features they've never dealt with.
So there's no way to bifurcate those two systems and run them parallel.
What I'd say, why wouldn't we just
do the retail one way? Just get it online.
Get the sportsman's out of the way.
Yeah.
Never mind. Okay.
Well, let's do get somebody here at our next meeting.
Okay.
And at a minimum, have a report. And Don, it'd be nice if maybe we'd also have a deadline that we would say we're going to have this done by X. Because
it's not that makes any difference.
If we can get there. If we can get there. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Moving on to 7I. Update on implementation of new abalone report card and tag regulations. Was that Kibisaki?
Yes. Again, good morning. On a more productive note, your new abalone report card and tagging requirements. This was a big change for our abalone fishermen, both shore pickers and divers. We did a lot of outreach in anticipation. It's proceeding better than when it originally rolled out. As you know, we had some equipment malfunction in terms of the paper product was a little less durable than we had anticipated. We are working with a print vendor to produce a slightly larger format with more durable product, so the tags hold up a little bit better. But by and large, compliance is very good, and people are adjusting to it. Unfortunately, we still have individuals that completely blow off the whole notion of limits and things like that. And
as we heard yesterday.
Yes, as you heard. So we do think the tag is working very well, and we will be making improvements, and you'll be hearing about that as soon as that's completed.
I think that's the only complaint that I've heard since I've been here was that the quality of the tag was not up to speed. And
so yeah, and that was just the vendor decided to be helpful. One of the compromises, you get a really tough material, it's hard to write on. And the vendor apparently at the last minute thought they would help with a product that held ink better, and unfortunately it wasn't as durable, so we're working to straighten that out. But folks are figuring out how to deal with it, and it's going to be very helpful for law enforcement. And we are getting a lot of positive feedback from, you know, when I'm out there talking to the divers, they're going, it's about time. We're glad to see this. We're glad this is going to help stop some of the gross, you know, gifting problems and abalone walking away from shore with no ownership to it. So we're getting very positive feedback in the field.
Yeah, that is a very good thing, Sonke.
That concludes the regularly scheduled ones. We do have 7J other, and I had a note to bring up the non-lead bullet certification list,
yes.
At least make an announcement of the availability.
Yes. What I'd like to do, Eric, actually, we are going to highlight, as you understand, with the new certification process, that's where you gave the department authority to certify bullets and ammunition that would qualify for use in Condor Range, and Eric's here to highlight our outreach effort.
Yeah, good morning, Commissioners. Eric Loft with the Wildlife Branch, and as you remember, several months ago, I think when you adopted the regulation and we began to get into the certification process, I will admit that I think several of us were nervous that it would get done in time because of the regulatory process. It is done, and we're glad that we have it up there. If you click on our DFG homepage, www.dfg.ca.com or gov, excuse me, not a community, and click on the icon that has the bullet cartridges there. Yeah, that's it. Please click on that. Attention, hunters, it is now time to get the lead out. Instead of hunters, let's voluntarily get the lead out, as you know. And then several links there. Let me see. Click on the one that the third one down. Yeah, click on that. So here's the notification for the manufacturers, and then there's a click on to the actual bill analysis. There's a clickable link to the application form there, the next blue one there. Give that a quick click. So the manufacturers would click on this, fill this information out, submit it back to the department, and would be receive their certification. So if you can back out of those to the previous page, and then click on that one in all caps would be great. So here's an example of the ones that have already been submitted by companies and approved. Actually, they began submitting them, as you see in those dates, in late March. And then after the regulation was adopted by the commission.
I couldn't quite see which ones were which. Could you just read off the manufacturer?
Yeah, we have Barnes Bullet, CCI, Custom Cartridge Incorporated, Dakota Ammo, Federal Cartridge Company, Nosler, Remington Arms, and Winchester Ammunition.
Okay.
And what these are is those are clickable links of the particular bullets, cartridges that
they go straight to the bullet.
That they manufacture, mm-hmm. and they aren't all submitted in the same consistency. We just took their information. Some of them, as you want, the one that was showed was Barnes, and they show pictures of theirs. Some of them just have a listing of the particular ones. The Barnes one is very good in that it shows an actual picture of this, so we think that that'll be quite useful, particularly for our enforcement folks.
Well, can we go back to the home page there where you had the different – there, right there. Let me see the map.
Okay, yeah, so that shows the southern part of the A zone, and the highlighted colored ones are the deer zones that are affected, all within that yellow boundary.
I'm just looking to see clarity on what the real boundaries are so people aren't confused. Particularly on the east side, what is the boundaries there?
Well, you've hit one of the long-standing issues that we have with our deer zones, and they typically run to the crest of the Sierra, as I recall.
That's not a road, then? That's
no.
A mountaintop? Well, that's awkward.
But that's the deer zones
aligns with the deer zones that we've had for years.
There's no meets and bounds up there.
Right.
And we will, in this GPS world, we'll be the first to admit to you that can be awkward.
Yeah. Actually, in this GPS world, couldn't we have, for lack of a better, not an advertisement, a Google Earth map that actually has the range that a guy could print out? You know, a sportsman could print out a Google Earth map?
Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah.
Why don't we do that?
Just put a red line on the top of the wherever
the heck
it is. We'll
look into that with our GIS folks. That'll be a good assignment.
Well, that should shoot.
Actually, it would take you about an hour and a half.
See, I know
folks individually are doing
that. I've
got
a guy in my office that can do it. Yeah.
You know, I actually could think I could do it on my iPhone.
Yeah, Richard and I'll have that ready for you.
I know, commissioners, but I was here when I heard the ALDS discussion.
I really think that kind of map would be...
I think Dr. Loft.
Sorry.
I think that kind of map would be of value... to
I
sportsmen,
right.
Because they could download, print that at home, stick it in their pocket, and they know where they are.
Absolutely, then on the ground they know where they are. I think that's a great. That's a.
Wouldn't it be easier to require iPhones for all deer hunters?
Yeah, there you go, Sankey. Do you?
I was going to say I started my career with the department struggling with deer zone boundaries. The practical problem, and we actually revised these several times over the decades, actually, to lines you could find on the ground.
Right.
And most of them are rivers, streams.
Perfect.
Roads. But when you get into Sierra Nevada, you have some issues. There aren't any nice lines. A lot of the lines on that squiggly thing is like the Pacific Crest Trail. Mm-hmm. We have included in areas. But there are other areas where that, because we're trying to manage herds, you wander out of, you kind of lose that biological connection, mm-hmm. so that the harvesting is occurring in the zones the deer live in. And then there are some areas like you got to come off the mountain somewhere, and you know the county line is sometimes still used.
I don't care what the lines are. Whatever they are, I trust you know what the lines are. I'm simply saying that in order to make this as fair as possible for people who are really, truly trying to comply, I think it's incumbent on us to give them a better map. And a Google Earth map or whoever does the maps, it has Google.
We do have maps, but I see what you're saying, something that has very defined
description of the boundaries. Well, if you have it's a topo. You know, essentially, except it's a picture, and you can say, okay, I know where this ridge is. I know where I am. Yeah. I'm good here, and I'm not good there. Okay.
I suspect we can provide that.
I'm sure you can. Yeah. Thank you.
One other final thought, if we can go back to the certified non-lead, the one in all capitalized there. And then we have items 2, 3, and 4 down their list where we talk about frangible bullets not being legal for big game in California. And then item number 4 is really that what this is not a complete list. This is what we've received from the manufacturers so far. And when we receive the stuff, it won't take us long to get it up there and on the web.
How long does it take us to approve one?
Now that you folks have made the decision to delegate that to the department, we're relying on Sonke Mastrup as a designated authorized signature on that and
Have we reached out to all the ammunition manufacturers and requested them
We've
to give us the data?
We've been doing that. Our staff has been working hard at contacting as many of the manufacturers as we can, trying to highlight
this. I don't
think
as many. I think if they're selling it in California, we should be reaching out to them and saying, look, this is what our laws are. We'd like to post the information for you. Please provide it. And then if they don't, then we've done our job. But I think we should be reaching out.
Well, we are.
So we're actually glad to see that you know this is there for you know when they, this takes effect July 1. So, and then also the other item is for the shotgun stuff. We basically mimicked the non-toxic shot that the Fish and Wildlife Service has adopted. So that's it in a quick rundown. So.
Sonke, your light's still on. No? Okay.
Are there any other items under other? We have some speaker cards on item 7. And you know, this is a carryover from yesterday. If you are here today and you want to speak on this, turn in a card to staff as soon as possible.
Jeez.
So we're going to start with speaker cards from yesterday for item 7. Paul Weakland, Tom Raftikin, April Wakeman. 3 minutes each, please.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. Well, I guess I'll start with my abalone issue. I think the people of the state of California are trying to tell you something, and you're not listening. You said that you've closed down the commercial fishery and all the harvesting of abalone south of San Francisco to stop the poaching. We still have not gotten any answers about the devastating disease withering syndrome that's been outplanted into California by the Fish and Game's outplanting experiments. You don't want to talk about that. The reason the poaching is so prolific, the people are trying to tell you they want to be able to buy their abalone at the fish markets and restaurants. Because of you, there is no legal or legitimate manner or way for the people of the state of California to share in their resource. You've got it so a small special interest group in Northern California is able to access this. The poaching will continue. The people are speaking. Your tags and report cards. Well, there is no statistically significant information that is being derived from these report cards. It's a burden. The scientists are not using this as data, team data, D-A-T-A. We're team data. We just collect the numbers. But figures lie and liars figure. And these numbers will never show the true status of the resource. And when you will realize that this prohibition, did we learn anything in this country on prohibition of alcohol in the 20s and 30s? And the FBI, raiding homes because of people brewing beer, wanting to drink a beer? Well, here in this state, we want to eat abalone. And we don't want to have to drive hundreds of miles and dive out in the cold water. We should have service personnel doing that for us. But no, because of your friends in the abalone aquaculture, you want to make sure that there is the only product that's available in California. It's sinister. It's evil. It's wicked the way that you are not allowing us to properly utilize our resources. Abalone is the perfect issue. You don't want to talk about it. Don't want to do anything about it. You don't want to give us any timeline. Oh, the timeline, right. Every time a deadline comes up, oh, go ahead. We'll just extend it another year, 2 years, another 3 years. Oh, deadlines mean nothing to the fish and game because you've never had to meet one. Put a deadline. So what? Now, this other thing about the yellow-eyed rockfish. No assessments have been done. No surveys have been completed. We do not know the status of the resource yet. You say it's going to take 70 years for it to recover. Is there a lack of honesty here? Yes, there is. Now, what do you do with a piece of property that's not productive? There's no mining, no timber, no agriculture. The cattle prices are down so low. What do you do with a piece of property that's not productive? I know. We'll turn it into a park. We'll make people come to see it. That is all.
Thank you, Mr. Wakeman.
Tom Raftikin, followed by April Wakeman.
Good morning. Tom Raftikin, President of United Anglers of Southern California. Thank you. And also I'd like to welcome our new director. I initially was going to talk about trawls here, but I think one of the things that came up yesterday is extremely important and something that you really have to take the reins on. Yesterday we heard from Maria Vojkovic about ITQs at the Pacific Council, individual transferable quotas. And this is a new way of rationalizing fishery, and it actually can be a very, very good way of putting something in place if you follow the standards set forward in Magnuson. Unfortunately, the program that's going forward right now under the Pacific Council, the one that, you're about to address through your seat on the council, is one which will, as Ms. Vojkovic said yesterday, will rationalize a groundfish trawl. What that means is it will institutionalize bottom trawling for groundfish. It will be setting out specific quotas for simply for bottom trawlers. We went through bottom trawling here, and we talked about bottom contact gear. And you made a point that you want to see very light bottom contact gear. What happens here in the Pacific Council is you're institutionalizing these factory trawlers that are out there right now. That's what happens when you go and say, yeah, we'll back this ITQ program. Again, we think ITQs make an awful lot of sense, but how you work with the standards and how you set this up, you cannot have selective capitalism where you're simply institutionalizing one portion of a fishery. If this is simply open to trawlers and processors, it isn't the way an ITQ system can be prosecuted correctly. And I think it's extremely important that you look at this, and before you give carte blanche approval and saying, let's go forward with this, take a close look and find out what it is and look at this in the public light. On another note, I also have my Florida license. And by the way, if you want to renew, if you lose your Florida license, if you lose your Florida license, you simply give them your Social Security number, and they literally, for $2.75, print you another one on the spot. I understand that the department is diligently working on this. Unfortunately, we've heard that diligence since the Davis administration. It was a done deal at that point. And I would concur with Commissioner Richards that we need accountability here. This is not a problem with the contractor. This is a problem with getting behind the contractor, not saying, hey, look, you may have problems, but if you sign a contract on this, we need to have it done, or if not, put penalties in place so the fact that they recognize that this is not, we'll get it done for you. Florida also, I don't know if you've fished there, you've got special stamps for tarpon. You've got snook. There are a number of things also.
Actually, the specials for snook. Not tarpon.
That's you. Well, there is. There's a tarpon tag. There's a trophy tarpon thing for $50
you can put on.
You
want to, yeah.
But the thing is, there are different. It isn't necessarily a straightforward license, and the contractor, if they can get it done there, they need to get it done here. But having the largest state in the United States as far as the amount of money that we pay for licenses, we should start getting our money's worth. And I know I'm a second over. We had the Joint Fisheries Committee on aquaculture and fishing in front of the legislature a little earlier this week. And during the course of that, we were talking about how much money different entities put into fishing. We're holding up waiting for commercial fishing on this. Commercial fishing contributes to the Department of Fish and Game every year. This is Director Mastrup's figure, Deputy Director Mastrup's figure, about $4 million a year. And that's important. You know, budget is critical. Right now, when you include licenses and fees, recreational fishing puts in $62 million a year. And the problem is, when we don't have something like this, you absolutely are jeopardizing that $62 million. If you want long-term funding here, you had better start paying attention to the folks that are paying the biggest part of the ticket. And you know, we need accountability in these things.
Yeah, we certainly agree with you,
Thank
Tom.
You very much.
Thank you.
Tom, just a quick question. I mean, I think we're all on the same page about the automated license system. I mean, when I go pheasant hunting every October in South Dakota, I print my license off before I go, and it's just really easy. And there's no, you know, I take your point on the loss of revenue, potential loss of revenue, by people just not being able to do that in California. So we need to fix that. But back to your original point about ITQs for trawling. First of all, I think Maria's point yesterday was that the federal government is moving toward dedicated mm-hmm. access privileges for offshore trawling, and that in California, since we have so little inshore trawling left, and it's basically been phased out statewide except for the remaining few small trawl grounds off Santa Barbara, I wasn't quite sure. I mean, we don't have any influence, obviously, over what the feds do in terms of moving toward dedicated access privileges. But it's also my understanding that that type of fishery management doesn't necessarily institutionalize any particular gear type or fishing. But what happens is when a management decision is made, whether it's to reduce quota or eliminate a certain gear type, it affects everybody, no matter what, whether they have 50% or 5% of the quota available. So I don't quite see how dedicated access privileges would institutionalize any particular kind of fishing.
In this particular, this is federal, and this is. But the thing is, first of all, you have a vote. You've got a vote on that council. You've got a seat there, and this is through the director's seat. And if you say, yeah, this is okay, you have put a stamp on that. And the problem here is this is an ITQ system not for a portion of a fishery. It's an ITQ simply for trawls. And what it does is it allows it says trawlers will get X amount of this quota, and they can bid on it, and the process can bid on it. We actually have tried to be part – again, getting back to the dollars and cents involved. Yesterday, Director Richards was talking about, when you talk about yellow eye, you've got about a 1 or 1.5 ton quota. And that 1.5 ton quota may determine the future of, I mean, literally hundreds of thousands of anglers. If we're involved in the process where we can bid on a slice of this quota, there's a slice of the other catch involved also. So all of a sudden, if you have an angler management organization who's also bidding on this, we can take a share of the quota and literally keep the entire recreational fishing community on the water for a period of additional months. So instead of it decreasing license sales and decreasing income to you, you have an increase in there. What's happened is in the Bush administration rush to rationalize fisheries, they're moving forward with programs that really haven't vetted all of these, and we have made the case on this stuff. But the thing is, we don't need the state of California going in and basically rubber stamping a bottom trawl fishery here. And that's exactly what's going to happen with this thing with the dedicated access privileges, the way it's set up right now. And again, let me get back to it. The thing is, if it's done correctly, ITQs can be a very, very valuable tool. You actually heard Mr. McCorkle yesterday morning saying, let's rationalize the nearshore fishery. So, again, how you do it is extremely important. Thank you.
Thank you, Don.
April Wakeman, followed by Barry Bauer.
Good morning. My name is April Wakeman. I'm an attorney for United Anglers of Southern California. And surprise, surprise, I'd like to talk about bottom trawls. We applaud the commission's efforts to document the light touch of bottom trawling to make sure that what's happening is what was shown to you. That's great. One of the factors I assume the commission considered in agreeing to leave the bottom trawl open was the fact that the bycatch, although in our eyes enormous, was still alive at the time it was put back in the water. We would like to suggest that part of the reason why that bycatch was still alive is due to the time of the tows. So please consider adding time to your equipment regulations, because that will help the bycatch survivability.
You're talking about the length of the tow?
The time of the tow.
In other words, when the net gets down and starts to fish, how long before you bring the net up?
Exactly, okay. Because as more fish obviously are cramped
that.
In,
yeah, I understand that.
Highly significant. And the other thing is that we'd like to see an open process. The council process is wonderful. The item is brought before the council. It's then vetted in a science team. After the science team has vetted it in an open process where everyone has input, then it's brought back to the council. Resources are tight in this facility, but if we can, the more open it is, everyone feels they've had input. Thank you.
Thank you, April. Any questions? Sunky Neal is here. That addition of time of tow does sound quite relevant. Is that something that we would be considering when we're talking about
We can certainly talk about it. I mean, remember, these fishermen are trawling for live halibut. So
yep.
By the very nature, they can't afford to tow too long, or they'll kill their very product.
Oh, I understand.
I understand.
But that is something I think that is something
we can certainly. I mean, I'm not an expert in how they're running, but your MRC, we could have. I mean, the logic would have them come in and explain
and talk
that
about it,
and
right.
You know how long they're towing and the realities of,
sure.
of their market and what that does to their towing. I would normally be a little hesitant to start having our enforcement be timekeepers for towing.
No, of course.
But that's something we should talk about, because I don't even know exactly how they do that.
Yeah, it's a new issue to me, because frankly I thought they'd still be breathing back there, but maybe they're not. Maybe it puts them under stress.
Herb Bauer.
Yes, commissioners. I'm Barry Bauer of Herb Bauer Sporting Goods. I'm the president of the organization and the largest sporting goods store retailer in Central California. We teach about 1,500 hunter safety students a year, and we sell probably the most ammunition in Central California. And we probably sell the most hunting licenses and fishing licenses in a single store in Central California. Certainly other members of the California Association of Firearms Retailers, like Big Five, sell lots of hunting licenses also. I'm also a Fresno County Recreation and Wildlife Commissioner in Fresno County, and I'm on the board of directors of the California Association of Firearms Retailers. And I have a problem that I need to discuss with you this morning. The problem is that based on the communications with the General Counsel of SAMI, Larry Keene, this week, and the principals at Barnes Bullets and the marketing organizations at ATK, Federal, and CCI, apparently there's going to be no rimfire cartridges available in a non-lead flavor by July the 1st. I'm trying to purchase, you know, ammunition for my customers, for the hunters of California. And these organizations are telling me, when I go to ask them to ship me some ammunition, that they're not going to have any rimfire ammunition. And let me give you as a quick illustration.
Let me interrupt you. You're talking about they wouldn't have any lead-free rimfire.
Lead-free ammunition. Yeah,
okay. I just want to make sure.
For rimfire. Yes.
Well, rimfire.
Excuse me. Rimfire. Rimfire only. I want to explain that. We certainly have centerfire rifle available. I've got every box that's manufactured, okay? I've got a workaround solution for the calibers that we don't have manufactured non-lead ammunition, and that includes selling the customer possibly a box of leaded and a box of non-lead bullets, and let him pull and seat the bullets so he can be compliant, okay? However, our largest selling ammunition, the rimfire, this is the 22 CCI rimfire, okay? There is no solution for the hunter in the non-lead rimfire area. It has something to do with the hardness of the copper and the way the cases now seated onto the lead and the pressures and making the actions on the guns work. And so no manufacturer has stepped up to manufacturing these products for us. So that's my problem. A couple of I've got a stack of solutions here that are under consideration as we move forward to July the 1st. One, and these are in order of least onerous for your commission, if you want to look at it that way. Change the regulation to comply more closely to AB 821. By that, I mean conceivably eliminating rim fire requirements, pistol requirements, black powder requirements, and stay strictly with the law of center fire rifle. Probably won't happen, but that's a recommendation. The next one is to defer rimfire ammo enforcement until ammunition is available. Now, I think there's a law in California that if you have a sole source vendor, you can't have a sole source vendor, otherwise a law or a regulation is invalid. But a no-source vendor is probably illegal also, okay? And you know, when you have a requirement that is not being able to be supplied by the world. The third item I have, all members of the California Association of Firearms Retailers could suggest to customers that they not purchase a hunting license if there's no legal ammunition for their firearm. And the fourth and least desirable is that all financially injured parties, because of this regulation, and I'm talking about the manufacturers who can't sell the stuff that they built for California, the retailers like myself, and farmers and consumers who have requirements for varmint deprivation may unite in a legal action. And that's the order of onerous, you know, solutions.
Okay, Mr. Bauer, I need to understand something
here
for the record.
Yes.
Are you and your organization threatening to sue?
No. I'm suggesting that that's an alternative as we go, as we move towards July the 1st.
You place that on the table. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Any comments from the
question
commissioners?
For this. Mr. Bauer, whenever a change like this is made, there's always a transition period.
Mm-hmm.
For manufacturers, for retailers, for hunters, and so forth. We lived through this 20 years ago with steel shot.
Sure.
In your experience, is the market demand for this sort of thing going to make this a transitory issue? In other words, is this going to go away over time?
Right now, relative to rimfire, and everybody wants to comply with the law, and if I had copper rimfire to sell, there wouldn't be an issue, okay? But right now, it appears to be somewhat of a technical issue relative to the mass and density of the bullet and the way the cartridge crimps into it and creates the pressure in the cartridge to actuate the actions and so forth. And to date, and we'll get a more clear understanding after the June meeting of the SAMI organization of whether they're possible. It's possible to make a rimfire solution. Okay, now going to the volume requirements, if relative to just California.
What's the SAMI organization?
I'm sorry. That's an industry standard manufacturing organization of ammunition manufacturers. Okay, their general counsel is Larry Keene, who I spoke with this week, and he represents the entire consortium of the manufacturers. It's everybody that was on that list.
We're aware of that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I'm not sure if – I'm quite sure it's not the economics of the issue right now. It's the technical possibility of creating that kind of ammunition right now. But we'll know more when SAMI has their meeting in June.
I have great faith in American technology and you know, it just seems to me it wouldn't make a lot of sense for us to chase the market with regulation. The market usually responds pretty well to regulation, and so does technology. But, you know, we can only hope that the technology will evolve accordingly as it has in the past.
Yeah. I'm less confident about that than you are, sir, and certainly I can assure you by July the 1st there is no solution, okay, which brings me to the deferral of enforcement and stuff like that, and we'll know before July the 1st whether anybody's even going to try it, has tried it, can't get it to work, and the technology is not forthcoming. I'm just kind of giving you guys advance notice that I have a problem and my consumers have a problem and you have a problem if this doesn't work out quite right.
Did any of the manufacturers to whom you spoke indicate that they were working on it?
A couple of them said they'd run some experiments and they didn't work out.
So
I can't speak for any particular one.
To your knowledge, none of them currently, the people to whom you spoke, are currently trying to develop a rimfire.
They have tried, have not been successful, and we'll wait until June to find out.
So they may be continuing to try. You're not sure.
They may be continuing,
right.
But it appears to have, no solution by July the 1st. I mean, it takes time to ramp up.
You know. I understand that part.
And you have to be prepared for the fact that there might not be a solution, okay? I mean, and we'll hear more of that in June when SAMI completes their review with their vendors, okay?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I just want to get on the public record with this issue because it's a big problem, because that rimfire stuff is a high percentage of my ammunition sales, and all the entry-level hunters, you know, the young kids that are taking hunter safety classes and stuff like that, that's what their dad takes them out, and they have a chance to plink and learn gun safety and all those kinds of things. And so it's kind of an entry-level product, and it's a high-volume product.
What percentage of your rimfire is for target, and what percentage of your rimfire is actually for hunting, do you think? I mean, you wouldn't know necessarily.
No, and I have no way of knowing, but I guess you have to look at targets. Squirrels, ground squirrels sometimes are targets.
Well, I mean, in out of the condor area is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't address that issue.
Well, let's make sure we don't perpetuate misinformation here, because there's a lot out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
Non-leaded ammunition is not required for plinking.
Of course.
Only if you're shooting at wildlife.
Correct.
A lot of people don't understand that.
Yes, no,
so
we make it clear.
Leaded ammunition you want for plinking and target practice.
Understand. And we make that clear to the consumer, you know, so he's not breaking the law.
Mr. Chairman,
right.
We can belabor this and belabor it. And you're on the record now, but I want you to know that you told us nothing today that we haven't already heard from some folks that are even in this audience today. We've been there, we've done it, and I don't agree with the action that was taken, but that's what was taken, and it is what it is. So there's no reason for us. He's on the record. Let's move on.
Well, I was not trying to badger the gentleman. I was trying to understand what all he was saying and what you'd.
We've heard it. I mean, everything he said, we've heard before.
And now the rubber's meeting the road, and I'm getting asked the hard questions.
Sure. Appreciate that, and thank you for taking your time.
Thank you.
Also, just to elaborate just a little bit more, and I'm sorry, Jim, but when you say it is what it is, that's true. But I think there's an ongoing, and you should know this, there's an ongoing effort on the part of the commission to further understand the challenges that the ammunition industry has on this, and to better understand those challenges. What will come of that, I can't tell you. But I can tell you that there's a continuing effort on our part to better understand how do we get to where we need to get to, because the action's been taken. So now what are we going to do about it? So I wouldn't want you to think that it's done and that the action's taken and that's the end of it. We're continuing to look at this and to talk with manufacturers and SAMI. How do we get to the finish line here?
Sure. And that's all I'm trying to do is emphasize the point right now, because push is coming to shove on this issue, and I've got to deal with it. I'm the buffer guy. I'm the guy that gets yelled at and stuff like that, and have to give the guidance to the consumers for us, okay? So I'm on record, guys.
Understand. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
That concludes public comment on item 7. If we're ready, we can move to item 8.
Yes, just a moment, please. Hang on, just let me give me 30 seconds here. This is a relatively important security question that we're talking about. Okay, on where we go.
Item number 8, receipt of commission informational items, 8A staff reports. I'd like to give the commission an update that on the organizational offsite assessment meeting, which we've been working on for several months, we have a date on the calendar, and it's actually been publicly noticed for May 21st, and that will occur in Stockton. So that's an open public meeting. There's an agenda posted on our website right now, and that will happen at 8:30 a.m. May 21st in Stockton. We will also, the other thing I want to mention to the commissioners is that there has been some efforts by the statewide, by county fish and game commissions to organize and hold a statewide meeting potentially this summer. And folks from the California Outdoor Heritage Alliance have been working with county commissions and with our commission staff on pulling this together. I'd like to get give the commissioners a heads up and see if there's a flavor by the commissioners on how much involvement they would like in this statewide meeting of county fish and game commissions. We can actually be we can be heavily involved if you want, our staff, and pull it together probably somewhere in the Sacramento area, but just wanted to kind of roll that out and see if there's any reaction, or you know, you can get back to me later.
Well, I think that's the goldenest opportunity we will ever have to convince these county commissions that they've got to go to their local DAs and set up the proper procedure for handling fish and game cases in the counties. That's where it's got to start. When they start designating a district attorney, a deputy, and a judge to handle fish and game cases in each one of those areas. I've been advocating that for many years now. This is our opportunity to promote that in these counties. The counties that have strong fish and game commissions already are pretty good about it, but the ones that have weak ones don't understand that, and this is our opportunity. Just like Commissioner Sutton said yesterday, it would be an excellent time for him to tell about the experiences he's had dealing with those situations.
I agree entirely with Commissioner Kellogg's remarks. I've attended a couple of the county fish and game commission meetings, and they are immensely frustrated with their district attorneys and whatnot, and they're not getting the funding back, which often they get, and it's really putting them in a real bind. And some of the programs that they do for youth hunts and things of this nature that the local commissions will be fund, they are now finding themselves unable to do so. So the extent to which we can help them and be involved in that, I'm 100% behind that.
Let me elaborate on that as well. I currently am still the chairman of the San Bernardino County Fish and Game Commission, and one of our and Commissioner Kellogg, you are dead on this issue. It's one of the most frustrating things for us is our lack of revenue, which comes from the fines. And we've got a great wardens out there doing a good job catching the bad guys, issuing the citations, and then it falls apart in the judiciary. And so I met with our county DA, Mike Ramos, and I also met with the presiding judge, because it's important not only from the prosecutor side, but from the judge side, because many of these judges were just letting poo-pooed it. And these, you know, they're like everybody else. I mean, they are overwhelmed by all kinds of challenges. But I sat down, had personal one-on-one meetings with both of them, followed up with several emails. Both of them took it to heart, and at various meetings of their constituency, the judges meeting, the presiding judges got all the Superior Court judges together, the DA at their meeting, and I'm not sure the number. I know it's double, and it could be as much as quadruple, but I'm positive it's at least doubled our revenues already. And that's a big deal to a commission that's $25,000 a year they're looking at. Now they're up to, you know, maybe we can get as much as 50, and who knows where it can go. So it can be effective. And I think Commissioner Sutton's example, I think he was the one who gave the example where they got the people on the boat and were taking them around and explained to them the challenge of, on these crimes against their natural resources and the severity of it and the seriousness of it. It's very, very important. So I absolutely concur. We should take the lead on it. We should help them understand they have options here and some opportunities.
It's a process of education, Dan, because what happens is they take these cases at the county level and they just roll them into the calendar and they go before whatever judge happens to be handling the cases that day. And the judges aren't familiar with fish and game laws. And what we have to the message we have to get across is that these counties have to get to the place where they can designate maybe one day a week or one day every 2 weeks and use the same judge every time so they can familiarize themselves with fish and game laws. Until they do that, these people are going to continue to get off with clean hands when the wardens do all their part to make it happen. So
I'm all for the judge angle. I'm not sure you can do that, but the DA's got to file the charges, and it starts with those DA's. If the DA's won't prosecute, then it doesn't happen.
There's no such thing as can, Dan. They can do it,
yeah.
And the DA's can designate one deputy DA to do the same thing. It's just a matter of educating, and if it comes from the County Fish and Game Commission as a start, then we as a state commission can follow up with them and have those kind of meetings where Commissioner Sutton and others can speak to them intelligently.
There was another problem that I uncovered in Santa Barbara and Ventura counties for their commission, and that was the fact that some of the DAs are actually changing the charge from being a wildlife type of charge to being something where the revenue didn't have to be shared. Which was kind of an interesting little twist these guys were doing. And so there's a bit of a problem with that, too. So this, once again, you know, as long as they know everyone's can be educated about this, but also someone's watching and we are tracking this, that might be another way to do it, too. Anyway.
Well, what I following up from a staff perspective, if the commission gives me the signal that they would like to be more heavily involved in this statewide meeting, we could look at it as if there's going to be more than two commissioners there, it will have to be a publicly noticed meeting. So if you want to go from that perspective, that we're going to have potentially more than two statewide commissioners at this meeting and on the agenda or present at the meeting, we would have to do a 10-day public notice.
What are the dates of the meeting again?
Well, we don't have a date yet.
Okay.
So, you know, we're looking at sometime in July. I saw Bill Gaines in the room earlier, but he's not in here right now. But, you know, he's got a staff member who's working closely with John Fisher on this. We can work with you guys, you know, offline on a date. But, I mean, I'm just looking to get a sense. If you want, we can roll this in and make this officially make the statewide commission involved.
I'm reasonably certain too.
Another option would be to designate one or two commissioners to go to one meeting and see at that point if it would warrant a statewide one for full notice and everything. I'm very comfortable with Commissioner Sutton representing this commission. We all are on the same page on how we feel about this, and one of the other two of you or Cindy can be there with them if you want. But
okay, good. So we're interested.
Yep. So we'll go with two commissioners then?
Yeah, not fully noticed.
Okay, great. Thank you. And let's see. That is my report under staff reports. We have one public speaker card for this issue, Paul Weakland. Okay. So that moves us to item number 9. Subcommittee reports and recommendations. 9A, Marine Resources Committee. Mr. Sutton, if you have anything you'd like to say, or Mr. Rogers.
Thank you, John. Just two things. One is that we are proceeding with the recruitment for our marine advisor, and that process is underway. We're going to conduct interviews shortly. We're also planning to seek a grant from the Ocean Protection Council probably at its fall meeting to provide a budget for some of the reviews we'd like to do as part of our work in the committee. The other announcement, unfortunately, it looks as though we're going to have to postpone our meeting again. We had scheduled, you'll recall, a meeting of the Marine Resources Committee for Friday, May 30th. I believe it's the 30th that was the date. Unfortunately, it turns out that conflicts with a couple of things. One is the some department internal meetings on salmon, but more importantly, the last meeting of the MLPA Science Advisory Team for this round will be held on that same day, and a number of people have come to us and said that they would like to attend both. So it looks as though we're going to have to find another date yet again for the Marine Resources Committee meeting. So we will let you know as soon as we have that date. It doesn't reflect, obviously, a lack of interest in this committee on the part of the commission. It's just a matter of arranging schedules so we can have the department there and the stakeholders who want to come.
Okay.
We 9B, Al Tauscher, Preserving Hunting and Sport Fishing, we did cover that a little bit yesterday. I don't know if there's anything else to add. Okay, so under item 9, we do have one speaker card, Paul Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. I've attended many of the Marine Resources Committee meetings. I'd like to remind you that we did two presentations at the Marine Resource Committee meetings and two at full commission meetings. And it was agreed and we were promised that turbid snails would be put back on the tidal invertebrate list. This is another broken promise. It has not happened. Richard Rogers was a chair of one of these meetings when this was agreed to. Yet we have not resolved this issue because of some type of deceit within the department. Some individuals, whoever it might be, are claiming computer error, human error, typographical error on not putting this species back on the entitled vertebrate list. And now I'm a bad guy because I want you to tell the truth and be honest. What's happening? We went to the Marine Resources Committee meetings, meant nothing. Went to the commission meetings, meant nothing. Was guaranteed and promised that turbid snails would be put back on the tidal invertebrate list. It has not. Lack of honesty. There's no integrity. Where's your honor?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Wheaton. Let's see. I'd like to make an announcement and for everyone, and we're going to promulgate this a bit and so that everyone understands this. We have no problems with someone bringing live ammunition into the room to demonstrate, to show us something. But it is very, very important that the wardens be aware of that. So that if anyone listening to this is going to be bringing a cartridge or something in to show us something about the lead and copper and or non-lead issue, it's very important that the wardens know who is in possession of live ammunition. That's a critical thing. Thank you so much.
That moves us to item number. We did number 10 yesterday. Receipt of federal agencies informational items. Item 11, receipt of legal counsel informational items. Deputy Attorney General Barnes, no. I wasn't sure if...
Nothing.
Okay. We do have a public speaker card on number 11, but since there was no report...
There's nothing.
So that moves us to number 12, business, new business. And staff has a suggested... item of new business that I'd like Deputy Executive Director Adriana Shea to explain to the commissioners for a possible action.
Commissioners, as we noted yesterday, upon your direction, your staff has been working with the department staff on possible amendments to the upcoming ground fish season. We've been working very hard with Maria and Sonke on this. And so given the new information and timeline and possible threats to certain yellow eye stocks for the upcoming season, I'd like to suggest, if it is your pleasure, to formally agendize this item for today's meeting. The action would be directing staff your staff to work with the department in scheduling a teleconference prior to your June 26th and 27th meeting to authorize staff to publish notice regarding your intent to consider amending the ground fish regulations. So if it is your pleasure to proceed, I'd love a motion and a vote to officially agendize this item.
Is there any discussion of this prior to a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous.
So we now formally have the item on the agenda, and now I would like to request you to direct your staff to schedule the teleconference meeting.
Yes, I'm sure we make that so direction. We need a vote for that.
Lovely.
Thanks very much. I have an item of new business. I've discussed this with staff. I'd like to request that we agendize for our June meeting a presentation by the North American Salmon Stronghold Partnership. This is a program that involves a number of conservation organizations, including the Wild Salmon Center, the states of Oregon, Washington, and California, and a number of federal agencies. It's an effort basically to save the last remaining strongholds for wild salmon in North America. The partnership also is seeking new federal legislation to promote this idea, to initiate voluntary programs involving landowners on these stronghold rivers. Rivers like the Smith in California, the John Day in Oregon, some of the last remaining undammed rivers. We've been very concerned, as you know, Mr. President, about the state of Pacific salmon, and particularly the salmon season, fishing season off the West Coast this year. Seems to me that we need to do whatever we can to help what remaining wild salmon still exist, survive, and prosper. So it's important to fix what's wrong. We need to get rid of dams. We need to deal with hatcheries and so forth. But it's also important, equally important, to save what we have left. And so I'd like to agendize a presentation by the North American Salmon Stronghold Partnership with the intent to advance a resolution of the commission to encourage the California congressional delegation to support new legislation on the Stronghold Partnership and the department to proceed with in cooperation with the partnership. And I want to say here that Neil Manji and his staff have been instrumental in cooperating with the Stronghold Partnership and being a real part of representing California in the partnership, and I want to thank them for that. And I want to make sure that the department and the congressional delegation to California have the clear direction from the commission that this is an important initiative.
I couldn't agree more. And you do have Commissioner Richards' approval, so
I want
staff, we would like to agendize that.
Let me distribute for the my fellow commissioners.
Would you hand that over to the staff?
Yes. There's a brochure on the partnership and a flyer on the proposed legislation you might find interesting in the meantime.
Thank you. Moving right along.
Thank you. So we are now concluded with yesterday's agenda. Good news. Things used to go a lot quicker with our old director. I don't know what's that. No, just... Oh, wait a second. I have a signal from the back of the room that a public speaker card. Sorry about that, Paul. For item number 12, new business.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. I'd like to suggest again that it was told yesterday that no surveys or assessments have been done on this yellow-eyed rockfish. So there is no known status. There is no reality in what is being purported here that they're in dire straits. You had an arbitrative quota that you put on it, but the quota was doubled last year, showing that there was a lot of fish out there to be caught. So are we being honest and truthful about this yellow-eyed rockfish, or there are other hidden agendas, biased opinions being pushed here that we're going to use again the word, what is it, conservation, precautionary measures, even though it is admitted no surveys have been done, no assessments have been done, the arbitrated quota that was put on was doubled, showing that there are a lot of fish out here. But that matters not. Your mission is to shut down all fishing, and you're going to do that. Is there a chance that aquaculture, we're going to start growing these? All right, that's all.
Thank you, Mr. Wakeland. Okay, number 13.
Number 13, announcement of results from executive session. Deputy Attorney General Deborah Barnes.
We have no announcements made from the executive session.
Item 14.
Item 14, announcement of bids and possible awarding of State Water Bottoms lease number M-430-02 from Marin County. I have Maria Vojkovic is saying something here, but that could be in error.
No.
Sankey, anyone from the department on this?
No, they were just, Maria's available if there's any specific questions, but this was your release of, or offer to go out to bid on the lease.
Okay.
Is there any discussion of this? Otherwise, I'm going to need a motion.
Mr. Fisher has a little explanation.
Fisher, you have a little thing?
Yes, we did have one bid from Mr. Michael Toussaint, who is here today, and that's the only bid that we have. And I just opened this bid up. It says that he is bidding $4,306 per acre, or a total of $21,530 for the 5 acres in the site. This has been noticed in the paper, and we've applied the appropriate fishing game code regulation, Title 14 regulations, to award this lease. It would be appropriate for you to consider awarding the lease now under, lease provisions specified by the department. And I think we have a motion in your agenda analysis for this.
Okay, there is one public speaker.
Yes, Paul Weekland on number 14.
How much time does he have?
Commissioners, Paul Weekland. This goes right along with the aquaculture that you don't want to talk about. There's no accountability. The violations have been grievous in this industry. The amounts of grant money that were been acquired on fraudulent conditions, and the Small Business Administration being sucked for loans and grants under this guise of aquaculture. These things are being proliferated. You were not stopping it. You were part of the conspiracy to defraud the people of the state of California on what's really going on these bottom leases and this aquaculture and products. Now, we're not being told exactly where this location is, but you can bet that it's prime real estate and that the people are not benefiting from this as they should be compensated. All right, that's all.
Thank you, Mr. Weekland, for your illuminating conversation. Let's see.
I have a suggested motion from staff on this item.
Is the applicant going to speak?
No.
We have no other speaker cards on this item.
Okay.
Suggested motion from staff is the Fish and Game Commission hereby approves the request of Mr. Michael Toussaint to lease State Water Bottoms lease number M-430-02 Marin County at a rate that was read into the record a second ago, subject to lease provisions recommended by the department, including the completion of an appropriate CEQA review.
Do I hear that motion?
No, I don't know enough about it. I want to see more stuff.
So move.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Let's have some discussion on it.
No, please, go ahead.
How long is the lease? What's the term of the lease?
Microphone.
Go ahead, John.
No, I was saying go ahead. Your mic wasn't on, though.
Thanks. We don't have a lease term that's specified to my knowledge right now. I think that we're looking at something that would be for a couple of years. In the way of background, Mr. Richards, this is a state water bottom lease that was in effect for a number of years, I want to say over 10 in the past, and through an inadvertent action, it was allowed to lapse. It wasn't renewed on time. So there is no real change in the state water bottom activities and the aquaculture activities that are going on, the same species of shellfish being farmed there that was being farmed there before. We needed to go through this process of noticing the lease through the Fish and Game Code regulations and the Title 14 regulations. So there's no real change. It's an existing operation. It's been on the ground for a number of years going on, and it involves approximately 5 acres in the Tamales Bay area.
My concern is I haven't seen the lease, so I'd like to know what the terms and conditions of the lease are. Is there any other benefits that we're getting other than the money? Is there any studies going on? Are there any other things that the department might actually like to get out of this effort. This is public lands, public property, and I think it's important that we're getting the correct rent. I don't know if this is the correct rent. I have absolutely no idea if this is the right number or not. I don't know if, you know, how long this is to go on. I understand it's been done in the past. That doesn't mean that it's been done correctly or that we're satisfied or that we might not want something else. So I'm reluctant to move ahead. I'm not reluctant to do aquaculture leases. I'm reluctant to go ahead without having enough data here that I'm convinced that just then, because it's been done for 10 or 15 years previously doesn't mean.
I think the department can speak to some of this. And just let me say again, in terms of history, the procedure required the commission to determine whether it would be in the public interest to do this lease. And the commission made that determination at the December meeting to offer this. So that's another piece of background information.
I wasn't here in December.
A related question while the department's addressing this is whether or not any of the alternatives under the MLPA in the North Central Coast affect this area.
I think.
I can answer that.
Yes.
Let's see here.
It's on.
I'm Michael Toussaint. I own Marin Oyster Company. I'll answer your direct question about the MLPAs first. None of the options include any of the aquaculture areas in Tomales Bay in the MLPAs, as opposed to Drake's Bay at Drake's Estero, which was included in one of the levels of protection for one of the MLPAs. Concerning your question, Commissioner Richards, the bid amount that I bid is approximately 1,000 times more than the going rate per acre in Tomales Bay historically. The leases have always been of a term of 25 years with first right of renewal for an additional 25 years. So first right of renewal for an additional 25 years is what I essentially lost by failing to notice in the files that this very long-term lease had elapsed. My cultural practices have remained unchanged. I was granted full authorization for the use of the lease at the December 6th commission hearing. And furthermore, the rent for the entire year, including thereafter the lapse of the lease, had been paid in full as for the year prior. And the department had accepted the rent, so there was a contract of sorts. And at that hearing, the DFG General Counsel recommended, the December 6th hearing, that is, the General Counsel, Joe Milton, suggested, and it was accepted by the commission, that I be granted full use to the rights of the lease for the interim period up until this moment.
Sure. You have a month-to-month lease. I appreciate your help on leases. I'm that's how I make my living, so I understand them pretty well.
Very good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Then did you have any other questions about the?
No. No.
Okay.
My questions are still remain the same. I just don't know enough about this. I haven't seen the lease, and I'm extremely concerned that you're talking about 25 years, and John had mentioned 2 years. Those are wildly different terms.
Okay. Let me fall back. 25 years is the term that I have on my other aquaculture lease. It is the term, it is the lease term that all of the other leaseholders on the bay have, including for their current terms, which are partly elapsed, and for their rights of renewal. What was noticed by the commission for this action was a term, quote, no greater than 10 years. Now, you asked about what term was chosen, and we have yet to negotiate on that. So if I'm correct, Mr. Fisher, it would be a maximum of 10 years and less were it agreed upon. And so there are several questions. I have many questions about this as well. What would the term, for example...
So we're not approving a lease then. Is that correct? Sounds like we're not. Matter of fact, we aren't, because you clearly don't have anything documented, so we're not approving.
No, actually, the motion is to approve the request to lease this area, subject to the provisions that will be clarified with the department that are in the works now.
So it needs
upon
to be
completion
out.
Of CEQA, which is also CEQA compliance, is forthcoming and will have to be approved by the department.
Mm-hmm.
commissioners?
My instincts would be to hold off for 30 days so we can get a little more info on that. That's what I'd like to do. But okay. The commission can do as they please.
Any further discussions? Sonke?
Yeah, President Rogers, I'd like to have Maria Vojkovic come up and kind of give you a little bit more background that may help you understand where we are in the process and what our options or your options are relative to this.
Thank you, Sonke.
Sure. May I just have one more word very, very briefly. This five-acre lease is fully developed, and I put everything into it. So now, that being aside, understand that it's a postage stamp on a letter, to use an analogy, surrounded by other aquaculture leases who are consuming the remainder of their lease terms with 25-year rights. So it would be the equivalent of, one parking space in this lot surrounded by parked cars.
The majority of the commission understands that. Mr. Richards is only asking these questions because he's new and needs to know. Well, that's why
I understand.
And I'm not opposed to aquaculture at all. Matter of fact, I think it's a terrific idea. I'm concerned about 25-year leases, and we don't know what the rents are, and some issues like that, and what the term is. I mean, the conditions of the lease. So
that's good. I understand.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank
Maria.
You.
Thank you, Commissioner. Maria Vojkovic for the Marine Region. The next step here, if you approve this bid, is to work with the Mr. Toussaint to actually identify the terms that we need to consider, talk about the CEQA process and what studies he will do to provide the department with the assurances of the impacts of his operation. Conditions of how he operates his business will be established according to code and Title 14 and any other direction that the commission may want to give us. What we've done in the recent past is look at shorter time frames or review periods within that time frame so that in case conditions change, laws change, operations change, that you actually have some control of what goes on within that lease.
Right.
So we have moved from something which was carte blanche, if you want to use that term, for 25 years to something much more guarded relative to aquaculture practices. So the next step is a several months' worth of discussions and laying out terms, looking at what the other leases in the area are subject to, issues that have come up since those leases have been put in place. So,
Is this going to come back to us, or do we ever see it again?
It's your approval that this man is a bona fide business, and it's in the best interest of the state to have that water bottom under production. It's the department's responsibility to lay out the conditions relative to our public trust responsibilities.
Mr. President,
please.
Just a comment. Generally speaking, we find that shellfish aquaculture is among the most environmentally responsible and sustainable form of aquaculture today. The animals leave the water cleaner than it started because they're filter feeders. That said, I don't think that means we shouldn't do our due diligence on aquaculture leasing, particularly long-term leases like this, and I'm confident that the department is doing that.
Okay, any further questions or discussion? We have a motion. We had a second. All those in favor? Or do we need a roll call?
I wasn't in here for the motion. I'd like to deal with
the motion. I'm sorry. Reread the motion.
Suggested motion. Fish and Game Commission hereby approves the request of Mr. Michael Toussaint to lease state water bottoms, lease M-430-02 Marin County, at a rate of, and could you say the rate again, Mr. Fisher?
Yeah, because he read that.
He just opened the bid. You don't have it memorized?
No, sorry. At a rate of $4,306 per acre, or a total of $21,530 for the 5 acres.
So at that rate, subject to lease provisions recommended by the department, including completion of appropriate CEQA review.
And it was that was moved and seconded. Do you want a roll call, or do you want to leave it the way it is? Okay, votes void. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those against or abstain?
No.
Okay. All right. So noted. It's approved. Going forward.
Thank you. Item number 15. Receipt of public recommendations and possible action on request for authorization to publish notice of intent to consider amendments of the migratory game bird waterfowl regulations for 2008 through 2009. Please note that the discussion hearing is scheduled for June 27, 2008 in Sacramento. Dr. Eric Loft is going to tell us how the waterfowl world is going.
Dr. Loft.
President Rogers, Commissioners, Eric Loft again with the Wildlife Branch, and all we're doing at this particular time is introducing and the topic, the initial statement from the department. We would propose that our waterfowl coordinator, Dan Perigary, come to your next meeting and give you far more detail than I ever could in terms of what's being proposed, and as he learns more in dealing with the Fish and Wildlife Service and the federal framework. No cracks about Davis.
No, I was just going to make a comment. correct me if I'm wrong, but Senior Biologist Perigary, isn't he in North Dakota counting ducks right now with the Fish and Wildlife Service?
Apparently, Mr. Perigary is watching this testimony because he keeps zipping me emails.
Oh, well, I think in the near future, maybe next week, he's going to be in the air with the Fish and Wildlife Service counting birds.
Any indication yet from him about the counts at all? Anecdotally.
In the Midwest?
Yeah.
No, but I... It seems like he's been grounded more than he's been up in the air, so I'm not sure because of the weather events. So I have not heard anything.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was curious about.
So, Commissioners, that's what we would propose for the waterfowls. Did Dan come back next meeting and give you more
Sounds
detail.
Sounds good. Any questions or comments from the Commission? No?
So we do have a suggested motion to authorize staff to go to notice on this issue.
Read that motion, please.
Suggested motion from staff. The Fish and Game Commission hereby authorizes its staff to publish notice of commission intent to amend the migratory game bird waterfowl regulations for 2008 through 2009.
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any discussion or questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Unanimous. 16.
And I forgot to mention, we did not have any speaker cards on that one.
I assume that, since you didn't show them to me.
Item 16, possible action on request to publish notice of intent, of commission intent to amend Section 300, Title 14, California Code of Regulations related to upland game birds.
Eric, why don't you just drop a chair?
Yeah.
please note that the discussion hearing is scheduled for June 27th, 08 in Sacramento. Dr. Loft.
President Rogers, Commissioners, Eric Loft again. Our upland game proposals are fairly straightforward this year, and it is again an off year for major changes to the regulation process. All we're proposing to do for this year is to add San Diego County, add a fall season to the turkey hunt there. The locals down there have been interested in this, and we fully support it, and it fits within the context of the existing CEQA document. Another option that for the few falconers are out there, they've asked for some consideration and to move the season a little earlier for them. We see no problems with doing that from the department's perspective. The third one, and John Carlson actually asked me to bring a couple of pictures, and so I did, relates to the Eurasian collared dove and our proposed regulation on it. You learn a little bit more about these things when you start looking into it, and one of the things I learned in looking at this particular species is that it is perhaps one of the best colonizing birds in the world. It comes from Eurasia. It apparently started out in this hemisphere in Bermuda in the 70s, came across to Florida, then across the south and into California just only recently. So the Eurasian collared dove, as you can see, is a little bit different than our typical mourning dove. It has that little collar band around the neck. It's a lighter color. Here's our mourning dove, typical mourning dove picture, kind of a more flesh-colored animal as you see them. And then this one kind of shocked me, and I thought it's a dove on steroids.
Really?
That is a big one.
I thought this photo was doctored or something like that, but it actually the bigger bird is in the background. So if you made them side by side, it would be even bigger.
Are they as fast as mourning dove?
I don't know, but of course the mourning dove on the left and the Eurasian collared dove on the right. And here's just another picture of birds on a wire. The mourning dove on the left, the collared Eastern Eurasian collared dove on the white. It's a lighter colored and obviously bigger bird. And what we're proposing from the department's perspective is to essentially remove the bag limit on this species in California. It's a non-native. It doesn't exactly overlap with some of our native birds, but it does share part of the same niche. So, you know, anything we could do to help continue, you know, keep it from spreading further, but also provide some recreational opportunity, we think would be fantastic. So Arizona has apparently no limit on it, and we have not heard of any problems related to that. There is a little bit of concern about misidentification of the
species.
But
if you take the limit off, then Commissioner Richards already asked if they're slower. They're also bigger. It was been the only opportunity maybe for him to get a limit.
Yep.
Yeah, you're
perhaps.
Well, Commissioner Richards is known to be a mallard shooter, so you know, as opposed to a teal shooter.
I'm wondering what they taste like.
Is there any concern among our enforcement staff about stopping hunters in the off season? Every hunter that they stop in the off season will be hunting these things.
Commissioner Sutton, we would propose to have it during the same season, so it would be just. In fact, yes, our enforcement folks, we're concerned about having it extend beyond the normal season.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Do I hear a motion?
With pleasure, I'd like
Excuse me. Hang on a second. You have to read the motion.
Yeah. And we do not have public speaker cards on this one. The Fish and Game suggested motion. Fish and Game Commission hereby authorizes staff to publish notice of commission intent to amend in Section 300, Title 14, related to upland game birds.
Okay. You want to make that motion?
I would be proud to make
that
motion.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous. Oh, boy, oh, boy.
Turkey hunters in San Diego, they're happy, I can tell you that.
Yep. Item 17, receipt of public testimony on proposal to amend Sections 120 and 120.3, repeal Section 120.01 and add Sections 120.1 and 120.2, Title 14 CCR, related to prawn and shrimp trawling. Any comments from the department on that? So this is public testimony, and we do not have any public testimony or any cards turned in on this. So no other actions needed unless there's discussion by commissioners.
Nope.
Moving on to item 18, possible adoption of findings and consideration of proposed project or alternatives and possible adoption of tag quota changes, clarifications, and urgency changes for 2008-2009 mammal hunting regulations. Dr. Loft.
Commissioners, Eric Loft again, Wildlife Branch. The simple, straightforward process for this year is we gave you a range of quota, and through our surveys this winter and spring, we've come to our final number of proposals for deer, elk, antelope, sheep, those species in particular. And that's what's before you now. No major significant changes in terms of quota numbers for any of those species. Some zones went up a bit, some went down a bit, very, very much, you know, just based on local information, numbers, things like that. The one substantial change will be the increase in the sheep tags. We mentioned that to you at the last meeting. With the I think 23 total, with two of them being auction tag hunts. And with that, any questions that you may have as a final
any questions,
comments?
Any questions?
We've got a motion.
John?
Actually, I'm sorry, I do have public speaker cards on this.
We do?
Yes.
Public speakers, please.
Barry Bauer, followed by Walt Manziel.
I covered my this is Barry Bauer. I covered my points earlier. I have no comment on this item.
Thank you, Mr. Bauer. Walt?
Walt Manziel, representing the California Rifle and Pistol Association, President Rogers, members of the commission, department staff. We support the science-based wildlife management proposals put forth by Dr. Loft. We urge a continuing effort throughout California with respect to the big game hunts to maximize the availability of youth opportunity hunts for the young people, even if that might cause a reduction in general tags or adult hunter allotments in some cases. And we know that many of the field biologists of the department are working diligently in their areas to try to find places to do these kinds of things, and we applaud that effort. If I may digress just a moment back to the subject we talked about before, the non-lead ammunition, I personally contacted SAMI, that's Sporting Arms and Ammunition Manufacturing Institute, and urged them. Rick Patterson, who directs SAMI, said he would email virtually every ammunition manufacturer in the United States, urging them to get their data to the Fish and Game Department. This was over a month ago. There is no... I've talked to two manufacturers. They have no plans whatever to try and develop any 22 long rifle non-lead ammunition. They stated this time is technically not feasible because of parameters of pressures that are involved and because of the design of the bullet and how it operates as opposed to the others. The CCI Corporation does have going into production right now. The first samples are headed out of a non-lead green bullet in the 22 Magnum rimfire cartridge. That'll be on the market soon. And they are expecting to ramp up and produce some non-lead bullet 17 rimfire ammunition. That will work because those are higher pressure cartridges in, as they're now designed.
Hmm. That's interesting. Thank you, Will. Any questions? Any comments?
No.
Okay.
Terrific.
Excuse me, Commissioners. One thing that Mr. Manziel reminded me of is that he mentioned the junior hunts. One of the things we have done throughout the department is we've changed the nomenclature. Those are all now called apprentice hunts, essentially the same thing, but instead of junior, they're apprentice hunts now.
Love that change. That's a great idea.
Yeah, I agree. And everyone is trying to promote young people getting into the sport, including the commission. I think it's a terrific idea. Okay. We need a motion?
Yes. Suggested motion by staff. The Fish and Game Commission, pursuant to the authority vested by said sections, which are in the public notice on this issue, and other sections that of the Fish and Game Code, to implement, interpret, or make specific more said sections, which are in the public notice, hereby adds, amends, or repeals regulations of Title 14 CCR, by amending sections 360, 361, 362, 363, 364, and 712 as part of this review of the 2008-2009 mammal hunting regulations. The Commission also hereby directs staff to prepare a notice of determination consistent with the approval of these projects and adoption of associated regulations. This notice of determination is to be filed with the Secretary of State for Resources pursuant to Section 781.5, Title 14, and Section 21080.5 of the Public Resources Code. Please note that the regulatory language will be included in the Commission's website.
Do I hear that motion?
So moved. Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Any questions or comments? Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Moving on to item 19. 19A, receipt of public testimony on draft negative declaration for nuisance Canada goose control orders, and 19B, receipt of public testimony and discussion of proposed changes to Section 503, Title 14, CCR, related to crop damage and nuisance Canada geese.
Commissioners, Eric Loft again, Wildlife Branch. Sorry. The nuisance goose issue is one, of course, that came before you a couple of months ago, and several months ago, and what we're now under is a public comment period that would end on May 27th. Information was noticed in the paper at the end of April that needed another 30-day review for public comments. So we anticipate on the nuisance goose, nuisance Canada, nuisance goose doesn't sound quite right. I should say nuisance Canada goose issue. That would be prepared and ready for your consideration at your June 27th meeting. So far, update on the negative declaration that's out there. We've gotten some comments from folks. Five have been up in opposition to the proposal and eight in favor of the proposal. And we, of course, are reviewing that and would provide response to those comments for you at the late June meeting.
Thank you, Rick. We have no public comments. Are there any questions or comments from the commission? No? Thank you.
I would like to state for the record, we have received some written comments, written letters on this issue that have been shared with the department and are in your binders.
Okay.
Moving on to number 20, discussion and possible adoption of proposed changes to Section 7.50, Title 14, related to Central Valley Salmon Sport Fishing. We have Fisheries Branch Chief Neil Mangi to help with this.
Good morning, Commissioners. Neil Mangi, Fish and Game, Fisheries Branch Chief. Have a brief PowerPoint presentation here. We're on the final stretches here.
You're a refreshing change from Eric.
I like that. Thank you very much. I'm from Humboldt, of course, so that's probably
I forgot. How could I forget?
Unfortunately, the picture that you see on the screen is not necessarily the conditions of the Central Fall Run Chinook this year on the Sacramento. Just to bring you updated information on what's going on and where we're at, as you're aware, the predicted Central Sacramento River Fall Chinook escapement is estimated to be about 59,000, which is well below. This is nothing new that I'm presenting today at this point in time, but well below the 122 to 180,000 predicted conservation floor. The Pacific Council recommended closures of all California ocean areas and requested no adult Sacramento Run Fall Chinook be retained in any Central Valley sport fisheries. National Marine Fisheries Service has since adopted the PFMC's recommendations. In terms of the Central Valley, there are 14 waters, streams, rivers that will be affected. There's a list of them there, pretty much from all the dams down that have a natural fish. Regulatory proposals. There are four options ranging from complete closure to a limited retention of one salmon on the American Feather and Sacramento Rivers in specific areas. Current gear restrictions, bag limits, and other protective measures, such as special status in certain areas, are still in place and will not be affected. Fishing for non-salmonid species, such as stripers, sturgeon, shad, things like that, black bass, will still be allowed. The recommendations will not be a complete closure of the areas unless they're already currently closed. It would be the zero bag limit or the lack of retention of adult chinook. The first proposal that we have is a zero bag limit in all 14 affected areas. The second option would be the zero bag limit except for the following: one salmon in the American and Feather from January 1 through July, and one salmon in the Sacramento from Red Bluff Diversion Dam down to Knight's Landing from November to December 31st, November 1st. The third option was the zero bag limit except for the following, once again, the American River from February 1 to July 15th, which is one more month restrictive in those particular areas, and the same time frame for the Sacramento River from Red Bluff down to Knight's Landing, November 1. Since I last spoke to you, and as early as probably or as late as a few days ago, I've had some discussions with NOAA Fisheries, and we, the department, have pulled back on one of our options in terms of our recommendation and came up with a hybrid option, or been option four. And that particular option is to protect spring run on the American Feather River, which the NOAA Fisheries had some concerns or issues about. So we have excluded or actually recommended closure of the American and the Feather all year round for the retention of Chinook salmon, while maintaining a one fish bag limit from Red Bluff Diversion Dam down to Knight's Landing from November 1 through December 31st. The hybrid option, once again, is a zero bag limit in all areas except for the Sacramento River between Red Bluff and Rebuff Diversion, Knight's Landing. There's very, very limited Sacramento Fall Run Chinook impacts in that area. As we've gone through this process, you've asked the department to do its best to try to carve out any type of fishery we can in an area that's going to have no impact or very, very limited impact. The department's biologists put together a nice package for me. We reviewed it, had it reviewed by NOAA Fisheries, and are very comfortable that we can pass the red face test, that there would be very limited retention of Sacramento River Falls Chinook in the area between Red Bluff and Knight's Landing. And just so you guys, everybody understands, is this area would provide approximately 45,000 angler hours of opportunity for individuals to catch a late fall run Chinook. And that concludes. I can answer any questions.
Any questions? We actually have four speaker cards, but are there any questions or comments as soon as Mr. Carlson stops making noises?
Neil, just a quick question. That I know you've worked hard on this with the federal authorities, and we'd all like to find a way to provide some angling opportunity here. But in the face of this disaster declaration on the commercial fish and the total closure of the commercial fishery, are you at all concerned, or the department concerned, about sending the wrong signal here if we have any season at all?
Yes, we are. We definitely are. But we also understand that we have to use the best available science, and this commission, the department, has been advocating that for many years. And having gone through the data myself, looked at it, tried to do everything we can to ensure that the recommendation we bring forward to you is the best, we feel that the option, or the hybrid option, to allow a two-month fisheries for late fall run fish from Red Bluff to Knight's Landing is, in fact, the best science available. Looking at the information we have, I'm sure everybody's aware of coated wire tags in Chinook salmon. During that period of time, we have not had one recovery of a coated wire tag from a fall run fish in that section of river. The reason I mentioned that there's a slight possibility of limited take is the fact that only 95 or 90% of the fish have gone to their tributaries to spawn at that particular time. So there are fall run fish still in the river in this section, but there are also a lot of late fall run fish in this section, and the current data that we have, the hard numbers, indicate that there has been no coated wire tag recovery from Coleman fall run fish in that section of the river during that period of time. But intuitively, obviously, if there's 90% of the fish are in the tributaries, there are a few fall run fish in that general area.
Any further questions before we take public comment? After public comment. Okay, let's go to public commentary.
Mark T. McClock, followed by Robert Weiss, followed by Dave Jacobs, followed by Bob Buki. 3 minutes each, please.
Commissioners, Mark Milkoch from NorCal Guides and Sportsmen's Association. And we're opposed to a 30-mile closure from Red Bluff to Deschutes Bridge during that late fall season. The late fall season, I'm sure you're aware of, the last 3 years has been record runs for Coleman Fish Hatchery at the hatchery. The spawn time ends for the fall run on their charts the third week in November. So what you've essentially done is cut off 30 miles of fishing and 2 weeks of our season for absolutely no reason. There's very few. During the fall run, once we get our first rain, the fall fish are gone. And the numbers that are back at the hatchery have been plenty of fish to get their egg counts the last numerous years. And I just can't believe that you're going to shut off 30 miles of the river and have a chance that we'll never get it back. So I'd like to see where that information comes from and have you reconsider that section of the river. Thank you.
Sir. John, next speaker.
Robert Weiss, followed by Dave Jacobs, followed by Bob Buki.
Good morning, Commission. My name is Robert Weiss. I'm a local resident of Tama County. I've been there all my life. I'm here to talk to you about a few things. I oppose all three options that the Fish and Game and the PFC have given us. My options would be, and I represent sport fishing industry, fishing guides, sporting goods stores, restaurants, hotels, auto dealers, and boat dealers. I have a pretty big following. Our number one option should be leave the season the same, two king salmon limit, single rod inland waters with a punch card with a 2-4 fish king limit. That would be option one. Not much changes than what we already have. Option two would be closure from, let's see, 1 king salmon and 1 jack from July 16th from Red Bluff down to Carquinez, August 1st through November 1st, 1 king and 1 jack from November 1st to December 31st, 1 king. And again, punch card and single rod with a 2-4 fish punch card. I've met resistance on the punch card in the past, saying that it's inconceivably in a timely manner to produce this document. We already have this document in place. Right. A simple initial or some sort of coding written on the document by the selling agency would be adequate enough to document catches. By doing the punch card, it would considerably reduce the sport caught fish, which we are trying to conserve. Number three option would be a modification to option number one, which the PFMC has provided to us. Option number three for us would be Feather Rivers, January 1 through July 16th, 1 king and 1 jack with a punch card. Sacramento River from Cottonwood Creek to Knight's Landing from November 1st to December 31st, 1 king. I believe that the sport fisherman bears very little impact on the fishery at hand. The major impacts through my studies and people that I've talked to are over water diversions, which have increased substantially from 1998 till 2007. Until we realize that the over diversions of the water with unscreened pumps are the major cause of the decline of the fall run king salmon needs to be addressed. National Marine Fisheries claims that the major factor in decline is ocean conditions, which that is not true. We all know, since Shasta Dam was put in, that water has the major effect on migratory fish and the ecosystem that they live in. I do believe that...
You need to summarize, sir.
In summary, I believe that the declaration of the king salmon industry should be enacted by the Congress for relief if the season is closed. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Weiss.
Dave Jacobs, followed by Bob Buki.
My name is Dave Jacobs. Good morning, Commissioners. One thing that was brought up earlier that I wanted to reiterate, I do have a file here, and if you look at the black lines, we have the fall run spawn timing and the late fall spawn timings here. We have these documented from the Coleman National Fish Hatchery. I'm a river guide. I work on the river below Red Bluff. I do live in Redding, California. I do fish the river through the mid-January, and with these spawn timings, I really do oppose the closure of river. I know that we have a tough You can tell by the suntan I'm still trying to lose from last year trying to catch these guys salmon. It was a tough year. But I would definitely hope we could reconsider the closure of river from Red Bluff Diversion Dam to the Deschutes Bridge. And I would like to bring up and put on record that you are definitely should be aware of that the Deschutes Bridge to Redding, our fathers used to fish this stretch of river. We no longer fish there. This happened 20 to 25 years ago. And there's, you know, our biggest fear is if you take it, if we lose it now, what guarantees or if ever will we ever fish it again? And that's one of mine and my family's big concerns of losing this stretch of river for me and my family's sake. I got about 90, I would say my income, 90%. I take care of my family guiding year round. I'm a full-time guide. I am very embarrassed that there aren't more sportsmen here address this issue. For whatever reason, maybe they think somebody else is just going to take care of the problem. I'll be the first one to take a lick of the onion this year, next year if we have to, but I would certainly be very disappointed to not be able to fish the Feather River, American, Sacramento River. These are my home waters. This is where we make our living. And if we can solve the problem, that's fantastic, whether it's one of 49 or a combination of the reasons. But we would certainly like to recommend the punch card issue as well. If even with an extreme limit of 2 fish per person per year on a punch card, I fish the Trinity as well. The punch card, we can have a catch and take limit on the punch card. And this punch card, what that would entail is if we hook and bring the salmon to the boat, you keep and punch your card. You get 2 salmon or 4 salmon per year, whatever we can come up with. This is a proposal. When you do retain your fish, it's not a catch and release, which I am. If you check with other biologists, the catch and release on salmon, which will take place with or without an open or closed season, because we can fish for striped bass, sturgeon. There's other techniques that can go on this river. In summary, I would really hope that we could reconsider a possible punch card and really relook at the Red Bluff Diversion Dam to the Deschutes Bridge section of river to remain open and possibly look into why it's going to be closed from January 1st to January 15th. We, for years, have been able to fish that stretch of river for late fall fish, and that's I don't see any reason that the fall fish will be taken from January 1st to January 15th. The fall fish are gone by the first of the year. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Jacob.
Mr. President, I just have a quick question for this witness. You guys have to remember that we don't know the river as well as you do. So when you tell us landmarks, they don't mean a lot to some of us here. So here's my question.
Sure.
It sounds to me, just to make sure we understand your testimony, you're objecting to the stretch of river that the department proposes to keep open. You think it should be extended, and you think that the season that they're proposing in the hybrid model, recognizing the department's trying to do everything it can to provide any angling opportunity
at
all.
We appreciate it.
You want a longer season?
Okay. We're already allowed to fish for late fall fish to the Red Bluff Diversion Dam in Red Bluff, California, until December 31st. Now, from January 1st to January the 15th, we're allowed to fish above the Red Bluff Diversion Dam for late fall salmon. These options are stealing the January 1st to January 15th section of a river for our sport angling. And that's 15 days of work for me that I'm going to lose out on and other sport fishermen keep in mind, that's for the late fall salmon.
Right, understand. Thank you, Mr. Jacobs. I'd like to, Neil, could you make a comment about that specific point? Oh, I'm sorry.
We have one more public speaker.
Let's get the rest of the cards because I want Neil to respond to his previous.
All right, go ahead. Fine, that's fine.
We have one more public speaker card, Bob Buki.
I don't want to forget that particular point about the 15 days about which the web began.
Yeah. I'm Bob Buki from Yuba City. I represent the Yuba Sutter area fishermen, and we were concerned about Neil's wanting to close the Feather River. I proposed earlier at our April 15th meeting that the Feather River could remain open if we would close the area just maybe 1,000 feet below the outlet. There is probably more fish taken in a week there than there is the whole year on the rest of the river. And if we did that, we would be able to remain having the rest of the river open. Talking to the hatchery up there, they have good spring-run fish in the hatchery, more than enough to sustain the hatchery. And I believe that we should be able to leave the feather open if we can close that one section of the river. And I'd like to see the hatcheries increase their fry program and their other programs for hatching more fish. I think this is going to help us, even though the federal government doesn't want us to do this, but there is no fix for native spawn fish. There is with the dams. So we have to rely on hatcheries. And so we need to increase our hatchery outputs. And we also need to work on the spawning beds for the fish. They're all silted in up there in the Oroville area. Nothing seems to be getting done about that. The fish aren't spawning down in the lower areas anymore because it's all silted in. The other thing is that water is our biggest problem. This is why we're hurting for the salmon. We need a water flush when we release the smolt and when the smolt are hatching, native spawns are hatching and going downstream. And I'd like to see some of these things happen rather than just stopping fishing. The fisherman's always the one that gets penalized, and it doesn't seem like anything else gets done. So if it's necessary to have a punch card, too, maybe that would be a solution for how many fish we take out of the Feather River and the Sacramento River. So. The other thing is the river itself, we're dumping hot water. When the salmon are coming up the river, we dump hot water out of the after bay into the Feather River. The main source of water is through there that's been preheated. And there is, and all we have is a sandbar all the way down the Feather River. It's all been sanded in from all the mining tailings. And there's no holes left for the salmon to rest in and have cool water. So I'd like to see the commission or whoever's responsible for that to have something we could do about all this. And where do we apply for relief? That's my other question.
It's a good question. Thank you, sir. That's the end of public testimony. Neil, we do. If it's a pleasure of the commission. Neil, you want to come up and respond to a couple things? Particularly, just for my wounded mind, would you start out with that January 1 through 15 question that Mr. Jacobs, I believe?
Yes, the area that he's talking about from Red Bluff Diversion to the Deschutes Road Bridge is a small late-run fall fisheries that would be considered collateral damage on this particular area. When we looked at the November through December fishery, there were major spawning areas above Red Bluff Diversion. The reason there's no fishing above the Deschutes Road Bridge is because of a significant amount of spawning. So in terms of trying to carve out the best fishery for that entire Sacramento system, we looked at a continuous area for a continuous amount of time. The dates that
you
he
mean
shows,
as opposed to going in for a 2 week period,
it would be yes, it would be the department's would have to look at going ahead and saying, you know, the department's recommendation to allow, if the commission wanted to allow some harvest, it would be November through December 31st, and then starting it up again above Red Bluff, you know, January 1 through January 15th, and you also start getting to consider some issues of winter run in that area, so. In order to protect everything, basically all the fall run up above, we just brought the line down to Red Bluff Diversion Dam. So there is some potential opportunity there. It's just how much you want to add to the regulations in terms of, you know, a 2 week slot here with then, you know, a big break here, then, you know, in certain situations, a little area. So that is a possibility. We could explore that further. Regarding the Feather American, and I want to make sure, Bob, it's Neil doesn't want to close the fishery down per se. I'm a Yuba City boy too, and if anybody's out there watching, this isn't my backyard. These are fish that I've fished for in the past. But what you have to realize is, all the commissioners know, there was significant discussion about this at the Pacific Council, and we're trying to do our best to carve out a fishery. And through the scientific aspects of analyzing the American and the Feather, we have carcass surveys going on for fall run fish all the way through January on those particular waters. And then the other issues going up to, you know, March through July fishery that we currently have right now. Well, we have listed species there which are spring run that we're trying to avoid. So, like I said, I've been racking my brain. I've been trying to identify the fishery, you know, as asked by the commission to go back and take a look at, and this is what we've come up with.
Mr. Kellan, yes. Do you have a question?
Well, you pretty much answered what I was going to, the 30-mile stretch that was referred to earlier. I just want to, for especially Commissioner Richards' benefit and some of you who haven't been here for this many years, every year I've been on this commission, once we set the salmon season, we deal with the inland river fishery and do what we can to keep these people in business. And unfortunately this year, along with the legislature making us shut down some fishing areas with the marine protected areas along the coast, we're not able to have a salmon season at all. So we're affecting a whole bunch of mom and pop bait stores and tackle shops and sports fishermen and what have you. And we always look to maybe having fishing opportunities for the people in the inland riverways, because we have the same issues. You got people who spent their whole life or generation after generation working those rivers and taking people fishing and guiding and putting them in motels and tackle shops and bait stores. And so if we have any kind of an opportunity at all, we need to really look at it. But every year that we go through this, these guys all pitch for as much as they can get, and I would if I was in their shoes too. But I just want you to know that Neil does an excellent job. He has, ever since he's been handling the inland fisheries, we've changed him a few times, and maybe we'll change him here too. But he's really passionate about taking care of that and giving these guys as much as he can as well. So just keep that in mind while we're having these discussions and making a decision.
Thank you, Mr. Cog. Mr. Sutton?
Just a question for Neil. I have a report from the Pacific Council, I guess it's the Scientific and Statistical Committee, dated last month, in which they're recommending the Sacramento Basin Recreational Fishery allocation be closed. Apparently, you've convinced them to relent on that. I know there's been a lot of negotiations recently, but I was under the impression the council was basically telling us we couldn't have a recreational season at all.
The council doesn't have that authority, Commissioner. You guys do. What the council did in their April meeting is they and the STT and Salmon Technical Team, they analyzed this year's fishery and options with a zero take of fall run Chinook from the Central Valley, because that will then, you know, indicate how many fish are going to be coming back, things like that, for hatchery purposes. So what we've done is tried to adhere to that based on a zero take. And like I said, it's not black and white on the Central Valley. I mean, the data that we have is limited. But like I said initially, if the commission wants to approve some type of angling opportunity, what you have in front of you as a hybrid option is by far the most scientific-based recommendation that we could come up with now, which is based on the information that the Pacific Council uses in terms of code-aware tags, things like that. There would be no. There would be zero because we saw zero based on intuitive knowledge that not all spawning has occurred and there are a few fish left in the river. There is a chance that you would actually come across one. But those chances are very, very limited. And like I said, it becomes a risk assessment of a handful of fish for 45,000 angler hours. So that's I hope I cleared that up a little bit for you.
Well, the only thing I would caution us is when, I mean, I know they don't have that authority, but when they're making those recommendations and we're applying to the feds for relief for the fishermen that we have shut down already, we need to use caution when we're doing these things because they got the horsepower to dictate what kind of relief we're going to get or not. So,
Sunk, you have a comment?
I just want to emphasize, because this is a very important point, that the council took action to protect Sacramento River fall Chinook. That's the stock the fish were really trying to protect. And based on previous guidance, as Neil pointed out, our job was could we provide any salmon fishing on other than Sacramento River Chinook and assure it with the highest degree of probability that we won't be taking any of these Sacramento fall Chinook. And that's what originally we gave you three options. Based on some further evaluation, we realized those other options were too risky of impacting other fish that we don't want to. And so what Neil has come back to is a proposal. If you want to consider providing any salmon fishing in the central system, this proposal we feel honors the council's intent and action and will deliver minimal or no contact or impact to this run. If you don't want to take any risk at all, the smart thing is to close it down completely. But all we do is give you this option.
Well, thank you, Sankey. That's helpful. I mean, I can certainly support the proposal from the department. I mean, I think the other thing we can all agree on is that the measures that have been proposed this year are largely treating symptoms and not problems, whether it's the massive federal bailout of the commercial fishery or whether it's what we're considering here. These are measures that treat symptoms. The real problems are going to have to be treated by following the recommendations of the Delta Vision Task Force, trying to save what's left of salmon habitat by implementing the North American Salmon Stronghold Partnership and actions like that, trying to remove as many dams as we can and restore existing spawning habitat. California lost 5,000 miles of spawning habitat when we put those dams in our rivers. If we can take some of those out in the Klamath and elsewhere, we probably should. So I don't want to editorialize here, but clearly we need to be, as much as we can, treating the underlying problems and not just treating symptoms year after year.
Well said. Commissioner Richards, do you want to make a comment?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important for the audience and particularly the speakers to know you have four fishermen up here, all of which fish with guides and understand and value your input and knowledge of the river. We're not remotely as good when we're by ourselves as we are when we're with a good guide, and we understand that, and I think your input is invaluable to us. And I think I know I speak for all four commissioners. Cindy's not here, but she's in the same boat, that this is not falling on deaf ears under any circumstances. So you need to know that. Having said that, you're not going to like what we say. There's a real challenge going on with the salmon, and I know that you all know that. The first speaker said something about being concerned about never having a chance of getting it back. And I think, again, I speak for the commission, that's the exact opposite of what we're trying to do here. I think the second speaker said something about a lick at the onion, which I like the analogy. I think that's basically what we're talking about here. This is a short-term, hopefully short-term solution that will get the fishery back to the great fishing that used to exist, but this is a real problem. This isn't a make-believe problem. One of the great things that we're getting to do right now, that this commission is committed to, and I certainly am as the newest commissioner, is to pay attention to the science. We can't let our emotions get carried away with what the science is telling us. And the science is pretty clear that this is a horrific problem. And if we don't take the unilateral actions that are being taken right now, we won't have any fishing. And we won't have any salmon. And so that's not good for you. It's not good for us. It's not good for the people and the sportsmen in the state. I think what the department has done is come up with a option that is not going to make everybody happy, but at least there is some fishing available, which is what we had spoken about at our last meeting. The initial recommendations were absolutely none, and I don't think that and had the science said that was the correct approach, then we would have had to live with that as well. So I commend the staff for coming up with some option, as limited as it may be, as limited on the mileage that it is on the river, and as limited in the locations, at least it's some fishing, which is better than nothing. I can assure you from if I have the good fortune of being confirmed and get to stay here, it's the last thing I want to do to see this stay in any length of time that is any longer than is absolutely necessary and mandatory. But by the same token, I think we have to take a lick at the onion. I'm going to remember that. I like that. And do what we have to do right now.
Thank you, Commissioner Richard. Commissioner Kelly.
To kind of wrap this thing up a little bit, it's we've heard this before, that if we don't get it now, or if it goes away now, we're not going to get it back. And when it pertained to limits and stuff in the past, and it always comes back when it can. So just be aware of that. We're going to do everything we can if we have stuff closed down now to get it back when the fishery will give us that opportunity. Maybe just a even if we give you anything at all, we're gonna take a lot of heat from a lot of people that that don't think we should even be doing that. So with that being said, I would like to recommend option four.
Well, if I may, before I'd like to make a comment, if I may, and then we'll entertain that as a suggested motion, and you can read that motion. I agree completely with the comments of my fellow commissioners. I've been every single year of my life active salmon fisherman on the fly for 40 years. And I've been doing this for a long time, and the idea of closing this down in any way is something that is extremely painful for me, because I've become very close friends with a number of people who provide services on the rivers and guides and places of lodging and food. And I've been doing this my whole life myself, but I want to continue to do it, and I want my children to continue to do it. And I agree that with Jim's comments that these things, this isn't like listing a fish and it's gone for a long time. This is a regulatory closing for hopefully a relatively brief period of time, and hopefully it's something that we can solve relatively quickly. That remains to be seen. You better hope that it was ocean conditions, because if it is ocean conditions, those actually did turn around after 2004-05, and hopefully we'll get some good runs coming back in. So you better hope Noah's right, because that's obviously the major damage here. And it's not the only damage to the runs, but it is the major damage to the runs, scientifically. So with that, I will entertain a motion.
Suggested motion from staff. Fish and Game Commission, pursuant to the authority vested by Sections 200, 202, 205, 215, 220, 240, 315, and 316.5 of the Fish and Game Code, and to implement and interpret or make specific Sections 200, 202, 205, 206, 215, and 316.5 of said code, hereby adopts option four, department's recommendation, which is a zero bag limit in all areas of the American and Feather Rivers,
and a one salmon bag limit in the Sacramento River from Red Bluff Diversion Dam to Knight's Landing from November 1st to December 31st. This option will provide the maximum protection to SRFC, Spring Run, Sacramento River Falls Chinook. I'm tired of acronyms, I'm telling people. In the American River and Feather Rivers, and will provide limited access to late fall Chinook, and zero salmon bag limit in the other 11 Central Valley streams. Amending these sections B5, B12.5, B18.5, B43.5, B59.5, and several other sections that are in the notice of title section 7.50, Title 14, Central Valley Chinook Salmon Sport Fishing.
Do I hear that motion?
That was my...
That was your motion. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? Commentary? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Unanimous. Painfully, but unanimous.
That moves us to item number 21. Receipt of public testimony on proposed changes to subsection B, 91.1 of Section 7.50, Title 14, CCR, related to the Klamath River Sport Fishing Regulations. Please note the adoption hearing is scheduled for June 27, 2008 in Sacramento. Does the department have any other comments on this section, on item 21? Neil, or is this Larry Hansen?
Yes, Larry Hansen from the Northern Region will be presenting this for the Klamath River.
Good morning, Larry. All right.
President Rogers, commissioners, good morning. As Neil just said, my name is Larry Hansen. I'm with the Department of Fish and Game's Klamath Trinity program based out of Redding, California. Excuse me. I'll try to speak louder.
No, that's all right.
Okay. Basically, I'd like to lead in today with addressing Commissioner Kellogg's comment regarding the last agenda item, that I'm here actually to present some good news today, and in fact that fisheries do come back. If you'll hearken back to 2006 on the Klamath River, the entire sport fishery on the river was closed down to the take of adult Chinook salmon. This year I'm here to tell you that we have a very robust allocation from the PFMC and a large sport fishery quota for the river. So, starting that way, I'd like to basically just do a brief update on the regulation package and where it sits right now. In February, we received the initial statement of reasons in San Diego. In March, you heard the first notice hearing. We were forced to re-notice our amended statement of reasons in April at Bodega Bay due to the fact that we received an allocation to the sport fishery that was actually larger than the top threshold we had allotted for a quota in river. So here we are. We're scheduled for a June 27th adoption. Basically, what we are anticipating in the fishery this year, the PFMC has, again, allotted a very large sport fishery to the river as well as a tribal harvest allocation to the river. And in the same token, they have also allocated an elevated spawning escapement of natural stocks to the Klamath above the 35,000 adult conservation objective for the basin. It's actually at about 40,700 this year. So in relation to that, and in relation to what we've just heard regarding the Central Valley, I've tasked my staff to look at developing daily bag limits and possession limits with the caveat that we expect a huge increase of angling effort by the general angling public due to closures in the Central Valley and closures offshore of the recreational fishery. We developed a model which basically looked at years where there was high harvest allocation in the fishery, and those years happened to be 2001, 2002, 2003, and 2007. In all those years, the allocation was above a 10,000 fish threshold. And then we expanded effort and harvest, trying to basically come to a equilibrium to where we could actually capitalize on the fish that have been allocated to the fishery this year. So based on that analysis, what we're prepared to present you for the adoption hearing in June is that we're looking at basically a 3 Chinook salmon bag limit per day, of which no more than 2 may be over 22 inches. So in layman's terms, 2 adults, 1 jack a day, with a possession limit of 9 Chinook salmon, of which no more than 6 may be over 22 inches. So basically it's a bag limit, daily bag, triple possession limit. Okay, we have been involved in extensive outreach and public relations involving the development of these daily bag and possession limits, and we will continue with that endeavor through the period before your next hearing in June. We've discussed these options with the Trinity County Fish and Game Advisory Committee, Del Norte County Board of Supervisors, Humboldt County Board of Supervisors. That was all done in March. In April, we had a conference call with members of the American Fishing Federation, Foundation, several professional guides that represent loosely guide-based effort in the Sacramento area and the lower Klamath River. Again, sort of kind of developing an idea of how much effort we can expect to see. And then next week, which would be on the 13th of May and the 14th, a second pass by the Trinity County Fish and Game Advisory Committee. And we have a large a Del Norte Board of Supervisors meeting in Klamath, California, as well as several Chamber of Commerce's that we will be speaking to, my staff and I. So having said all that, we have received 3 or 4 basically similar themed public comments based on what's been put out already. And you heard several of these comments in your April meeting, as well as yesterday from Caltrout's representative, Mr. Tom Weselow. The first of those would have been the South Fork Trinity River opening dates. I propose changing those by realigning them. Through discussions, since the statement of reasons have been issued, we have come to agreement with the groups, and there were, I believe you heard yesterday, that they were willing to let it rest, and that we're all okay on that one. The second issue was regarding spring Chinook salmon and the protection of those wild stocks. The department is in agreement with what you've heard, and we are in need of securing funding and looking at research in order to safeguard the wild stocks that occur in the 2 basins within the system, which are the South Fork Trinity River and the Salmon River. The third issue is a bit of a thorny one, and it's going to require some further consideration at the commission's pleasure. I will have members of my staff available to present you a more detailed briefing regarding the steelhead production issue at Trinity River Hatchery during your June proceedings.
Good. Thank you, Larry. We do have one speaker card.
Yes.
Any questions before we take
Larry.
Public speakers?
Just a question for Larry. At least a couple of us on the commission think this might be a good year to make a fact-finding trip to the Trinity River, so we may be
you come on up. You.
But
ooh, that's a good idea.
obviously, the Klamath River system is, I mean, I wouldn't want to give anybody the impression that everything's hunky-dory in the Klamath, because we've got, obviously, a settlement agreement governing the entire river basin. We've got some continuing issues that are being addressed at the highest levels as we speak. But as I said to Neil last time, that I mean, it seems that we're in a boom or bust situation. As you mentioned, in 2006, we had to shut the entire West Coast salmon fishery down because of the Klamath. Now, all of a sudden, we've got a boom in the Klamath. Do you expect that to continue, or is that what happened in 2006 an anomaly?
It's a good question, and it's very interesting, actually. The reason that the allotment or the allocation to the river, which is a tribal sport fishery and escapement conglomeration, the reasoning why this allocation is so high this particular year, you can basically backtrack to the fact that there will be no ocean fisheries. Had there been exploitation at sea, we were basically looking at a model that would have projected we would have possibly fallen under the conservation objective this year. However, we get a backhand allocation due to the lack of ocean fishing effort.
And with the levels that you're recommending, do you see a sustainability of the population next year, regardless of ocean fishing?
Again, another great question. what we're looking at, again, we look at cohort analysis data. In other words, 3-year-old fish, 4-year-old fish, 5-year-old fish.
Okay.
We have a fairly low return of indicators for our 3-year-old return this year. Largely, the run will be based on 4-year-olds, but that's sort of confusing what I said. The bottom line is we're modeling, and we've modeled under these harvest scenarios to allow a larger escapement than the original conservation objective. So what you're saying is you're seeding the river with more fish. You have more spawning opportunity. We're basically setting up for a better picture in the future, providing habitat and offshore conditions cooperate and all the planets align,
yeah,
and everybody's happy.
There's so many things involved, right, always. But right. So we're looking at growing the population.
Right. And also any unrealized sport harvest or tribal harvest within the system, the point is those fish will escape to spawn.
Okay, good. That's what we should be doing.
Okay, good.
Those are the right bogeys.
We have one public speaker.
Yes, and I'd like to thank Mr. Hansen. A fine presentation from a Humboldt State graduate.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Mr. Carlson, could I just take just one quick moment to point out that the current director and the former director graduated from the University of California at Davis, and so thank you.
They're taking offense, as noted.
Are you going to mention Sac State, Mr. Cook? Because my wife, sitting behind you, went to Sac State, and she reminded me that's where you went also. Are you going to take credit for that?
Always take credit.
Some of us here on the commission are residents of California by choice, not by accident.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy. Okay.
That means they were run out of other states, I think, is what that means. The bail bondsman was on their tail.
Escaping snow.
Yeah, exactly.
E.B. Dugan, speaker card on this issue.
Good morning, Commissioners, President Rogers, and to our new director, Mr. Kosh. We appreciate your concern and effort, and I appreciate your time and effort and consideration. Listening to the Sacramento situation, my heart bleeds for my brethren guides and members over there. We were in the same position in 2006, believe it or not. I represent the Trinity Rivers Guide Association, in-river sports fishing group, and also I was a member, or I was the in-river sport fishing representative for the salmon disaster plan that we just finished up this year for the 2006 bad season. According to you, you'll have copies on there of emails and stuff that have been sent to me in regards to you. I've had over 100 emails. This is just a sample. I didn't feel that you needed to have 100 copies of all the emails because you get those as they come along. I do want you to consider them. I have worked with Mr. Hansen in the past, and I will continue to work with him. I have worked with Neil Manji when he was in Mr. Hansen's position. I still like working with Mr. Manji. Oh, yes, we have our disagreements, but we are able to sit down at the table and hammer out a considerable even method of doing things.
That is a blow to your credibility, Mr. Dugan. I'm sorry, but anyway, please go ahead.
Thank you. We are supporting Mr. Hansen's recommendation for the fall Chinook harvest of 3 fall Chinook per day, of which 2 can be adults, 1 can be a jack, and also have 9 in possession. So please consider this strongly. Our groups have worked very diligently with Mr. Hansen. And I thank you for your time and consideration.
Question?
Yeah, I just have a question. You mentioned the river guides that were affected negatively in our earlier conversations there. Is it your opinion that the actions that were previously taken have improved the fishery from where it was prior to those actions happening? Is it better now, or is it the same, or how do you see it on the Klamath?
Thank you, Mr. Richards. Mm-hmm. I am concerned that we didn't get the necessary corrections for our escapements and things like this during those years on 2006, and I think they'll find out the same thing over in the Sacramento. The relief did help some a year late, but I think that we have to really seriously look at this very hard and try to help our fish do recover. I think that, as you all know, salmon fishing is cyclical, and they will come back, but it just takes a lot of effort on our part, not only the guides, but the business people and your people's consideration. Some of your staff are very good at trying to work with us and inform us and keep us abreast of what you're trying to do, but they also listen to what we see on the river. This has been the biggest problem in years past. I attribute our recovery, our major recovery this year, is because there was no ocean fishing, and we in the river asked to be restricted to 18,900, and Pacific Fisheries and NIMS said no way, because we wanted to give our ocean brothers at least the last 2 weeks of August when there would be no salmon fish affected.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
This is a good testimony of some of the experiences we've had over the years of people panicking that the end of the world was here, because these guys, you know, figured they were going to have to shut the doors and everything. And here they are still here. That was back in 06. We was able to give them a decent season last year. And I, you know, nobody really knows the real reasons for this salmon collapse. There's a lot of conjecture about what it is and what it isn't. But I've always said that, you know, the fish are smarter than all of us, and I believe that that's going to recover and surprise everybody quicker than we all think. We'll just have to wait and see.
Thank you, Commissioner Kellogg.
So
thank
true, you, Mr. Figger. Kellogg.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes, and so we can go. We're not going to go to consent yet because we're going to – I'm sorry? Excuse me. Okay, we're going to allow someone who came in later and wanted to make a comment about an agenda item that we passed.
Number 19 on nuisance.
Agenda item 19.
This is on 19, receipt of public testimony on draft negative declaration. Let me, for the record, Henry Smith. Get 3 minutes, sir. 3 minutes.
Yes, sir. Mr. Carlson, other commission members, thank you very much for coming here to Monterey and also giving the public an opportunity to address some of the issues that you're dealing with today. My name is Henry H. Smith. I live at 1314 Jocelyn Canyon Road, Monterey, California. I'm a full-time volunteer at this point in my life. I volunteer for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, California Department of Fish and Game, Bureau of Land Management, and I do lots of wildlife habitat improvement projects for the U.S. Forest Service with wood ducks, quail, etc. So that's kind of gives you a thumbnail sketch of my background. I have to tell you, I'm a little bit concerned about the language relative to this issue in terms of us classifying this species as a nuisance. And I don't know all the details of how you're going to deal with it, but I know in the past the California Department of Fish and Game has done an outstanding job of managing our wildlife and other resources. And I'm a little bit concerned that we're on a slippery slope here, that we're going to classify this particular species in some instances as being a nuisance. I would feel a lot more comfortable with this if you held your public hearings throughout the state in the various areas. And that's my understanding is that's not happening. And, well, my point of view is clearly, biased in favor of all of our creatures. I do recognize, because I'm also a golfer, that sometimes I get down in it. But in fairness, we're also providing an attractive, field for these creatures, because what are they like? They like water, they like grass, etc. And I've dealt with predation issues from a standpoint of a farmer in the past, and I know there's ways in which we can deal with the overpopulation. I'd feel a lot more comfortable if I knew the process by which you were going to deal with this issue, that is determining what the population is now, what your goal is in terms of a proper population, et cetera. But when you think about it, there's a whole bunch of other creatures that could be fall into this category of nuisance. One of them would be deer. And don't get me wrong. Listen, I care for all these. But when you think of the damage that deer do to automobiles, I think we have a lot more collisions with deer and automobiles, and if we're talking about economic damage, that's it. I think I've said it, but crows, for example, holy smokes, they're really predators on other creatures. So I mean, please think about it before you just unilaterally declare a particular species as quote unquote a nuisance. Thanks again for
thank you,
hearing
Mr.
my
Smith.
Comments.
Thank
yes,
you
sir.
For your comments.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, back to well, actually, we're going to pull one from consent calendar.
Yes, right? We did, commissioners, on consent calendar item number 22. We did receive a request for comment, so we'll pull that from agenda from consent. That's number 22, consideration and possible action to amend commission policies related to steelhead, rainbow trout, anadromous rainbow trout, and salmon. E.B. Dugan would like to comment on that, and then we will need to take a separate vote on that, the possible action on that. E.B. Dugan.
Thank you again, commissioners. My name is E.B. Dugan. This time I'm representing a little bit differently in the group. I'm a voting member of the Stakeholders Committee for the Trinity Restoration Program, and I'm also representing the Trinity River Guides. Here again, I'm saying that I have worked with your people and your staff, and I enjoy working with the gentlemen that I do work with. I'm here speaking on the Trinity River steelhead, and for years we were like to saying we were a unknown secret steelhead haven for steelhead fishermen. I can no longer say that. Last year, we were inundated with steelhead fishermen, and we have created a problem up there now that everybody discovered us. They all want to come up and fish. I do say this, that our restoration program is working. It's not succeeded yet, but it is working. 2006, we had a hatchery return of 11,547 steelhead, and in 2007 we had a 11,399. So we are on a declining basis there, but that's again cyclical. In 2006, the weir count for the Trinity River was 3,884 steelhead returning. Remember, now the weir only counts roughly 5 to 10% of the fish. In 2007, we had over 5,000 fish returned to the Trinity River steelhead we're speaking of. The liberal recommendation of harvest that Mr. Hansen has requested, we totally support, but that is not the solution to the problem. That is only a temporary fix. One of the problems is that we need to reduce the hatchery steelhead releases
from 800,000 down to 500,000 that will assist in balancing out nature so that we don't have an overabundance of escapement of hatchery fish into the native fish habitat. So that's why we're requesting that you might consider dropping from 500 to 300. And I realize it's not your position to make a 100% decision on that, but a recommendation from you to NIMS would definitely help us. And this all goes under the record of decision for 2000. I do appreciate the opportunity to pull this from the consent calendar, and I understand it is a necessary item that you people have to consider. I did feel that you should know that our restoration program is working. It just hasn't been completed yet.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Mr. Duggan. Did you read our agenda item 22, or did you read the title of it?
I read the title. I did not read
it. Yeah, because what you just said doesn't relate to what we were doing. It was, policy.
Yeah.
And I was having this disconnect, wondering what happened here. Anyway, thank you very much for your comments, Mr. Duggan.
I'm sorry if I'm
it didn't go back to Mr. Hansen's issues. This is all commission policy.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Right. And we agree. So anyway.
So there is no more public comment on that issue. If the commission would entertain, I have a suggested motion on item 22.
Please.
That the Fish and Game Commission hereby approves the changes in this policy that's in your binder, then that will be adopted as a policy that will go into our code book as commission policy.
Do I hear that motion?
I'll move.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion or questions? This is just on 22 now. All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Okay, now go to
Yes.
Everyone understands that 23 has been pulled. We announced that before the meeting. 23 is out of consent. So go ahead, John.
So then I have a suggested motion on approving consent calendar, and this would be that the Fish and Game Commission hereby approves its May 9th, 2008 consent calendar, items number 24 and 25.
Do I hear that motion?
So move.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion, questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous.
Thank you. That takes us to announcement of future meetings. Yesterday, for the record, the commission had talked about holding a joint meeting with the Blue Ribbon Task Force on May 28th. Subsequently, we've received information that date will not work for the Blue Ribbon Task Force. So May 28th is no longer a joint meeting date. We will work with their staff and come up with another date, and that will be posted on our website and on their website. So other future meetings that are coming up for the commission. On May 21st in Stockton, as I mentioned earlier, there will be a organizational assessment and workload planning meeting. That announcement is already agendas on our website. And then June 26th and 27th, we'll have a full Fish and Game Commission meeting in Sacramento, and August 7th and 8th, we'll have a full meeting in Carpinteria. The rest of the year's meetings are posted on our website. And I think that's everything I have, except I did want to announce happy birthday to Chief Nancy Foley, who is not here today. Lucky for her. She's out actually working a abalone check station, rubbing shoulders with her staff in the field, which I'm sure she's having a lot of fun.
Okay, any further questions or comments or final business from any of the commissioners? Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
I'm sure there's no discussion. All in favor say aye. Aye. The May Commission meeting stands adjourned.